that we switch our cellular phones off so that they don't needlessly trouble us. Please just switch off your cellular phone. Chair, we welcome you and your delegation. I think we have met a couple of times. Ourselves and yourself, we more or less know each face that is here. We know each other. Luckily for us as MPs, there's no reshuffle. So once we're appointed, we serve our full term. As you can see, same old, same old. So I think we'll not go into the preliminaries of introductions. But to welcome you very much. And National Treasurer as well, Robert Tanganetsa, we're meeting today not on those other matters of the SAPN that we usually met around. Today it is about you, yourself. And the issues are very straightforward, deviations and expansions. Just to put context, we as a committee have been concerned about the use of deviations and expansions by departments and entities to the extent that we have requested a quarterly briefing from National Treasurer on this matter. And so our engagement today is a result of that briefing, looking at the let's wait for this light man to finish so we can continue. Just switch on the lights. All we want is to be able to see. Yeah, it's okay. It's all right. Okay, thank you. We are concerned that this measure, which was meant to be used for emergency and exceptional instances, seems to becoming a new normal within government, and we want to say no, it cannot be, it should not be. And when we analyzed the report, CETA was one in rent value, one among the highest, within the top 20, within the top 10. So our engagements with departments and entities last week, today, the other days, will be arising out of this. So we have called you so that you can take us through on why things are like this, and or actually to put us at ease that there was absolute necessity and not an abuse of an enabling process for emergency cases. I think that's the long and the short of it. We want to dissuade departments and entities from using deviations and expansions in a way that we know can be open to abuse. We saw one very big company with a tender at Transnet that was extended 13 times. 13 times. And it's a simple thing, security. Can't say you can't go and take it because they are sole provider. Can't. That's clearly abuse. So, you know, this morning at Stangana, I was thinking as I was going through the deviations of Sita, and I looked at one amount and I said, don't we need a cap? You know, and I said, maybe it might not be feasible at all times, but if you're going to deviate and the amount is almost 100 million, I mean, I just get one chance and I'm set for life. So I'm just saying those are the concerns that we have, and we want to be satisfied that we don't abuse the system. So I think that's where we are. Now, I want us to get straight. If we're going to be here any longer than is necessary, it will be your fault. Otherwise, we have every intention to knock off early. We have another hearing in the afternoon with defense. We want an early one, because you are half with us in fighting those other battles. But we don't want to see some of these tendencies that are here, because we want you to continue to be on our side and not on the other side. So let's quickly clear this thing. And so what I'll do, I'll give my comrade Brother Seth to deal with the deviations, and then comrade Chilwane expansion. Right, and then we're done. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. We're not introducing, we know each other so well now. I would like to just look, I would like to work through some of the schedules. You sent us a presentation, but I think the detail we really want to look at is in the schedules. So,
just a minute. Sure. Before you ask, my apologies. I'm the one who forgot to mention that the CEO is not around. I received an apology. Incapacitated. He ran the Comrades Marathon over the weekend, so I think he bit more than he can chew, so he's still struggling to recover. Yeah.
Yes, Chief, he clearly is incapacitated by lunacy and craziness. No, obviously all great respect to anybody who runs the Comrades.
Sorry to disturb you. Good morning. Chairperson, CETA is where it is today. It's in trouble. It's in tatters. It's on the brink of breaking down. You cannot apologize for the CEO like that. We need to have a formal apology, and we have to take a decision at this meeting if you want to proceed without him. Because he knew that he was supposed to come here. They were supposed to come last week, and they were not ready. Now he's making a Comrades Marathon his scapegoat. People go there for health reasons, not for that. If he got sick, we are sorry about that, but we really need to take it serious. Situmo is really busy breaking this entity into pieces, and we have to deal with that, Chairperson. Thank you.
All right. Anyway, the Chairperson of the Board is here, together with the CFO. So in terms of the law, it is the Board that accounts. But I'm sure in terms of the day-to-day management decision, especially the financial side, CFO is here to augment whatever the accounting authority has to say. But I hear your point. I know that this is not the last engagement. Remember, there is a report that we are awaiting. end of June of investigations into CETA, which we have said once it is out, we need to engage again. So I'm sure some of the issues and the concerns that you're raising will find space to be engaged at that point. Right? Sure. Okay.
Chair, thank you. There is no doubt. I mean, there are many questions today that I'm going to ask that, unless there are really excellent responses, that I'm going to have to send you away and get us further information anyway. So this certainly won't be the last occasion. I wanted to start off one commonality in all the schedules, and it's become the bugbear of myself and the committee, is the extension of licenses and the resale of licenses. And in the schedules, CETA lists this as an industry challenge. All right. But I really want to dig down into that because, and maybe you can just start off by educating us on this as briefly as possible. The way I understand it is that this computer here has got Microsoft on it. I've purchased the license for that Microsoft to run the operating system for this computer. Okay, and I don't need to go back to Microsoft in a year's time. In other words, the computer doesn't close itself down in a year's time. If I want to upgrade to a better, faster working system, or whatever Microsoft says is better, sometimes it isn't, then that's my choice. So I understand from efficiency point of view, you elect to do that. However, what we see right across departments in the deviations and expansions, and obviously CETA are the root of a lot of this, not being the root in a bad way, but you advise all those departments. How do we break the cycle that, frankly, IT companies seem to have on the whole of government, saying we sell you this BMW once and you can never buy any other car? That's it. Because that's what it looks like to this committee. So you have these licenses being purchased in perpetuity. And frankly, that's akin to ransom. That's akin to exactly what happened with FDA and PCM and the pharma permit system. Is that if you don't pay us, if you don't play our game, frankly, just like old school mafia, if you don't pay the protection money, we're just going to close you down. So can I get a detailed response on how is CETA going to handle that challenge and help other government departments handle that challenge? Because I believe it's a great area of abuse. Can you just give us, before we start getting into nitty-gritty of these schedules, let's have a response on that, please. Thanks.
Good morning, and thank you for the question. You're absolutely right. Majority of our deviations are around license renewal, but also maintenance and support of those licenses or systems that are in place. I think just to answer this,
just for the purpose of the question, let's just stick to license renewal.
Yes.
Maintenance and support is a capacity issue. So let's just stick to license if we can. Just start there. Thanks.
Yeah. So if we just look at the license renewal, what will normally happen is that you will most of these organizations that like Microsoft and all these other ones, they will have a channel in terms of how the product ends into CETA or into the department. So you will have an OEM, which will be Microsoft, and then they will have resellers and original equipment manufacturer, and sometimes you will call it OSM, which is the original software manufacturer. What will happen is that you will then have to the OEM in the country will deal with the end users using resellers, but in majority of the time, if you look at the Microsoft, for instance, they deal with us as CETA directly, meaning there is no person in between when it comes to licenses or contracting for licenses. So we've been coming up with different strategies and how do we deal with the systems or licenses where as government we might not have the capacity to develop those systems and we have to leverage on what is there in the market. So the first thing that we have done is the OEM negotiations where we go to them and we say, as government, we know that we've already invested so much money in Microsoft, for instance. In the absence of any other system, what we want to do, we want to come to you with the whole demand of government, and we are saying, if you look at the economy of scale, we should at least be getting value for money in terms of bringing so much business to yourself. However, if we do that, then we get more discounts than if we go individually, each department go in there individually. So we've put framework agreements in place with certain OEMs or original equipment manufacturers, such as Microsoft, and we have seen, the last one that we have done with Microsoft, we've seen government saving around $2.5 billion by just doing that. That is just one way of dealing with this matter. The second issue that we are looking at, and I think we've mentioned this in the past, is where the IP is owned by government. So there won't be the renewal of any system because government will then do the patches, do the upgrades, and all those things. But obviously we need to look at whether we've got we need to assess whether we have the capacity in terms of the skills to do that. And in that instance, right now, we have contracted around 100 companies that we are going to use to develop systems that are customized for government, and we as government we then own the IP. So in negotiation with the OEM, we've also looked at a different approach where we said, okay, for licenses, especially first time as contracting for the first time and renewal thereof, we would like to then do it directly with the OEM without the person in between. Therefore, the margin that we are going to pay to the middleman, it's cut off. Therefore, we are then getting value for money, and there's huge discounts that we will be getting. However, when it comes to services, we will then go to the market for the services. However, for the licenses, we then go directly to the OEM.
Okay. So can you, let's just get into some quick back and forth now. How long does a license typically last?
Normally it's 3 to 5 years, right? But it can be swept longer. And we've seen in most of the systems, they can go up to 15 years. But what we do is we contract wrongly by contracting for 3 years or 5 years instead of contracting for a longer period where you even then, if you're contracting for a longer period, the money that you're going to pay will be way less than if you contract for less period.
Okay, so we understand that there's a severe planning issue here. So whose fault is it that we did not contract for longer periods of time? That we have these continual deviations and expansions because we have to renew these contracts without following normal procurement processes? Whose fault is that historically, let's say over the last 10 years?
I'll answer that question in twofold. One, I think, obviously, CETA, because
Who? Head of which department? I know CETA. We know CETA is a problem. Don't give us that. You know, who's responsible and who is going to face consequences because of this? Because if we add this up, this is a lot of money.
the different line of business from CETA perspective. There's application maintenance, the people that then contract first time when a department or CETA internally wants to engage in a certain system or license. So from where I'm sitting, I think application maintenance would be the line of business responsible for this area. And also, if you look, the hosting area will also be responsible. But majority of this comes from our converged communication area. If you look at the deviations that we have here, especially when they are coming from the external client point of view. So it's a combination, but application maintenance are those people that have to make sure that we do have agreements in place for all the systems that we're using.
Yeah, and did they make the decisions just to go with short-term contracts? Or did somebody above them, the CEO, the board, etc., who made the decision to go for these short piecemeal contracts and not contract longer?
So, obviously the contracting will be based on the budget that is available. And as you are aware, the government gives you a budget for 3 years. So I think without doing the proper market intelligence, that's where we then confuse the contracting period and the MTEF period. So I'm sure you'll see majority of departments, they go and contract for 3 years. If they go over that, it will be 5 years. And that's something that we have identified as a problem, to say, why contract for 3 years for something that you know the lifespan is, or the useful life is more than 3 years? Because for supply chain, you need to contract. There will have to be confirmation of a budget. And if that budget has not been appropriated, it then becomes difficult in terms of saying, is this budget going to be there in 5 years' time or in 10 years' time? But I think we need to look away
Is that a question? That we might not have a budget in the next 10 years or 15 years when we still have government. All right, don't answer me. I'm just saying it is crooked reasoning. Yeah, continue.
Okay. You see, and I want to be brief on this so we can move on to other things. When a license expires on a product, does that mean the product doesn't work anymore? So it can continue working after the expiry of the license. So why are we so fastidious about relicensing at that time? Or is it, and I need your help here, is it dangerous to push it? Is it dangerous to push it given the role that CETA plays? That's my first question, and because I'd like to move things on. The next question comes to capacity. In one of your answers, you stated that you were employing 100 companies to assist with development, etc., etc. I've got to be honest with you, that raises a big red flag with me. And the question is what about, what is CETA, maybe this is to the chair of the board, what is CETA doing in terms of what Treasury did back in the days of Minister Manuel to start organic growth of youngsters coming through who in 20 years' time are world-renowned experts at what they did, like they did in Treasury. Unfortunately, it's been broken down a bit lately, but hopefully I'll get back there. The organic growth, the Asian model style, where it's an honor to serve and you come through and an organic growth, you grow in the system and you really become top-notch after a period of time. Is CETA doing anything like that? So the first question is how dangerous is it to go over license periods? Second question is, what are we doing about capacity at CETA to grow our own timber?
Yes, thank you very much, another member. What we're trying to do is to move away from, we've tried to change the business model, to move away from what everybody else thought CETA was just nothing else but a procurement agency. And hence everybody thinks that when their license comes to an end, we are working on these 3 months MTF cycles. So what we have tried to do, the 100 companies that is mentioning, we're trying to develop SMMEs. We've moved into the area of trying to start hackathons and trying to imbue and attract younger, talented individuals into the organization that can, you know, help us in trying to build a quasi sort of Silicon Valley of our own, so that we have some of the IP, you know, resident in the country. So the second aspect is with respect why we try to engage with the OEMs, the Microsoft of this world, the Cisco's of this world, is again to try to see if there can be no skills transfer over that period of time, so that we can then indigenize. I hear where you're going. We need to move towards indigenization of the skills and IP to South African corner, so that we're not forever beholden, because we seem to be negotiating with somebody putting a gun on our head at all instances, whether it's Oracle, whether any of the OEMs, because they're foreign-based. And for an example, in terms of the pricing, we can't even lock them, because we can't even lock them to price, to prevent price fluctuations, because the once the rand exchange, dollar rand exchange denominations, it wipes up just about every other thing. We're unable to lock them because they are dollar denominated. Where we need now more creative measures, whether we can have none of them want to finance us in a rand denominated, what you call, they want us to keep us on a dollar. We end up being in the foreign exchange management market rather than being in the ICT businesses.
We can move on from here. So what we're saying that is that, so what we're saying is that if we have this session again next year, we're going to see a market decrease, what you're telling us, in deviations and expansions in terms of licenses. Would that be possible? Are we, these things are cyclical, so hopefully you can negotiate new agreements and that sort of thing, and we can start dropping down.
It will be a gradual movement.
Yes,
obviously
not, because it's cyclical. Right, now let's get into the schedules. I'd like to go to Annexure D. Annexure D is these are the lists of deviations submitted to National Treasury. Are you with me? Okay, Annexure D number 6. This was maintenance of cabinets and UPS for correctional services, single source, and I really want to drive into these single sources because I want to test whether or not it's justifiable. And the reason for the deviation here given by yourselves is no response for the market, and the amount was for 10 million rand. So are you saying to me that nobody in the market, in the South African market, was interested in making 10 million rand? You put it out to tender, and remarkably, nobody was interested in making money, and so you had to go to a sole supplier who was Telenetics Technology Solution. Can you explain that? I know that Treasury supported, and I'm going to be challenging Treasury as well. That makes no sense to me. And frankly, with the history of CETA, when I see sole supplier, the red flag goes up immediately. You must just forgive me for that. So, I hope you have the answers quickly, so we can move through them. Okay, let's go.
Right. Indeed, we did go to the market, and the responses were not. They didn't meet the mandatory and the functional requirements that were in the spec. So we do believe that's why in brackets we've put possible corruption, because we are saying for something so simple, there are lots of people out there who will be interested to grab this opportunity. So indeed, that was the process. There was an RFB that or a request for bids that was published, and it came out.
Okay, so you've identified it as possible corruption. What are you doing about that? I see you've got your corrective responses, market intelligence capability development. I'd rather see people have been fired or sent to jail. So can you tell us there, if you think it's possible corruption, that only Telenetics got it, what are you doing about that? Are you just thinking that, or are you going to actually do something about it?
I think as the committee is aware, we've started doing something about it. Almost half of the people in supply chain were, I wouldn't say fired, but they were dismissed, some resigned. So we have started doing something about such things. Without saying we have done something about this one, because these reasons that we have put here, we had to analyze them. I think that's the reason why we couldn't send a report on time last week, because we needed to go through the documents and find out the real reasons. So after this,
okay, that's fine. Okay, the point is we need to plug this Telenetics contract in some way. Okay, so Telenetics got to say, okay, Tim was dealing with it, and Tim has resigned, or Tim has been fired, or Tim has something happened there. You can't just leave Telenetics floating around if you think there's corruption. So I need you to, in our future engagements, come back with a response on that particular one, what's been done. I understand you've given us a schedule, you can't give us everything, but please, if we can flag that one. Then we go down to number 11, which was maintenance and support on desktops and notebooks. You said that this was for 6.2 million, and you said there are irregularities in the SCM process. So you're getting to a rhythm here. My question is, what's happening there? Is that part of the investigation you're talking about? And whose name can we plug in next to that one? What's happened? And the other question we'd ask is, if people just resign and walk away, are they being pursued for trying to get money back? Okay, let's get into the rhythm. Can you just tell us that one and what's happening with it?
So that one was for CETA, and it was the extension of the leasing of the desktops and maintenance thereof. So a decision was then made to say, let's hold any procurement process relating to this, including until we've made sure that the scope of this is well defined, because we are going to go out to the market for a scope that was not well defined. So we believe that if we were just going to do that, somebody was doing something in the background in relating to this. Hence, we've identified that there might have been irregularities in the SCM process. Nothing has happened yet on this one specifically. We obviously need to look at it as one of those, as you have mentioned, that we need to look at Telenetics. We will be looking at this one also.
If I may just add to that, so we started with the SCM whole team in a forensic, but that investigation made it clear that we also would need to look further into lines of business. So the people that initiate the contract, could there not be possible corruption on that end, and they drive the method of procurement, and then procurement didn't ask the necessary questions. So that is our next step, to also do a cleanup in lines of business.
You mean like body centre? Because he initiated quite a few, yeah. All right, now let's go back to our favourite one here, number 16. I'm not going through every single one. The maintenance of SAP's switching centre infrastructure, which was for 9.1 million. Now that's continuity of services, integrity of SCM progress, process compromised, consequence management. Just come through on that first, please.
This one specifically
we went out to the market to renew the contract. But now when we were doing adjudication, we realized that the process, the SCM process, was compromised. There were some irregularities that we picked up, and then we couldn't then award the tender. So we then decided to cancel that tender and not award it. Hence, we were saying the we needed to extend because the switching centers needed to be maintained. However, the vehicle that we used to go out to the market didn't yield the results because of the process being compromised. I'll just check what were the issues, but I do remember very well that we dealt with it in terms of the adjudication, and the committee felt that we cannot award this because the process was compromised.
Sure. I mean, you could have put in your additional comments on the ledger here. Then I wouldn't have bothered you with it. But tell me something, is there anything that you do for the SAPS that is regular? That's above board. Okay, I'll leave, I'll make that a rhetorical question. Okay, let's stick with the SAPS. I see you down there at number, it's almost at the bottom, number 19. The installation of video conferencing equipment. Now, I've picked up on another list the same thing. It's 22 million rand. So let me just give you my set of questions around here. First of all, on the other list it says requested, so the suppliers are EOH. Okay? On the other list, which I don't have at my fingertips right now, it says that this provider was requested by the client. There are a couple of those here and there. So let's dig into that, because I've clarified with my treasury colleagues that even if, yes, it does happen that the department or the board may say we like this supplier, but still that supplier must then be shown to be the only person in the country that can provide that. And I'm quite certain that EOH are not the only people who can supply video conferencing. Now, another list requested by the client, that's requested by the SAPS, and once again, red flags go up. Sorry? So what's going on there? And then also on this particular list here, it says here the reason for the deviation is urgency. Somebody needs to have an urgent conversation with someone? Was there an urgent video conference that had to happen tomorrow, so we had to go with EOH? Because I know when you install video conferencing equipment, it takes a long time. So where it was like an interdict in court, the judge will ask you, where's the urgency? So how can urgency be a reason? So just take us, let's start with urgency. What was the urgency that you've listed here as a reason?
I'd like to give a bit of background. So what happened was that we had contract RFB 1221. That was for network equipment, including video conferencing equipment, or Huawei, Cisco, Juniper, and all those. So this vehicle, SAPS could go, and we had an engagement model where departments could go and engage directly with the supplier. So the time when we were actually taken to court on this contract, it was expiring in February 2017. With that, SAPS has already started with the process of contracting EOH. So 1221 was a bid that went out on a competitive market, and few companies, including EOH, was part of the winning bidders. It was sort of like a panel for different products. So for Huawei, EOH was the one that got the business.
Sorry to interrupt you. Who else was on that panel? This is kind of a JV. Do you mean other names involved?
Okay. So there were few for different brands, if you want to call it that, or for different original equipment, there were different people. For Cisco, there were BCX was there as one of the company. For there were also in the Huawei space. So I don't remember the other people, but I do remember that for Cisco specifically, BCX was the successful bidder. So with that, the engagement model was that we've already awarded this to these companies. The departments can then go and contract with the suppliers. So in February, when this contract came to an end, SAPS was already in a process of contracting with EOH for the video conferencing. So when and that process was not yet finalized. Because the contract has come to an end, they then had to come to CETA to then do the contracting, because they couldn't contract on a contract that has already ended, because the court said you can't use that contract anymore. So we then, I think the agency is, because they were already in the contracting phase at the time when we took over the process. Hence, we felt that the reason for the deviation was an agent matter. However, we also realized that it was because they requested, we could have done it differently by going out to the market. And we couldn't do that because they were saying the budget is in this current financial year. Hence, they couldn't go to the next financial year to execute this transaction. So that's why it ended up being a deviation.
So it was fiscal dumping. Just spending the money quickly before the end of the year. Is that right? So are you telling me EOH won this on a competitive bidding process? And if they did, why have you put yourself a rider?
Yes, they did win the bid on a competitive pricing, and it was just now a matter of identifying the demands from the department side and contracting with the suppliers.
So you're saying that CETA pre-qualified EOH and then recommended EOH to the department and said you don't need to go through the bidding process again. Is that what you're saying? So then why does it say single source here on your schedule?
Yeah, I think...
Why is it even on the schedule?
The reason...
That's my question.
Okay. I think perhaps we would have interpreted the law to the latter. So the contract, RFB 1-2-1, where EOH won fairly, expired on the 4th of February. However, the contracting or the procurement process within that was not finalized before that contract came to an end. Therefore, they couldn't then go and contract using RFB 1-2-1, because then we would have been found wanting going forward, because the court said you can't use RFB 1-2-1. So when we now got the bill of material for us to contract, the only way that we could find to contract them was using a single source instead of using RFB 1-2-1. I think maybe we might have interpreted the law incorrectly or too narrow.
Yeah, I think single source becomes the wrong citation, if that is correct, because it is not because they are a single source in the first instance.
Okay, well, Treasury did support the deal, so I suppose we'll have to rely on them. Now, just in terms of that, when it comes to value for money, do you have details of the technical specs of this? I'd like to know, maybe I'm tainted a bit by the FDA debacle where ampules of water for 500 rand a bottle are sitting in a warehouse somewhere. Where were these video conferencing facilities installed? Because in the oversight I do in my constituency of the police stations, I don't see any video conferencing equipment. So can you tell me what we spent, what you thought was a good idea to spend 22 million rand on? Where is that? How many links is it? Which offices are linked up? I get it that it's a very good idea for efficiency of communication, but where is it? Can you give us that detail now?
Sorry, I won't be able to provide that detail to say where was the video conferencing installed. But we can get that detail.
Would the SAPS know that? Obviously they must. Would they handle the arrangements in terms of installation between the supplier and themselves? Do you have no oversight or insight into that?
We normally do have insights in terms of the installations because there will be the contract that is entered into. If we do the procurement, the contract is between us and the supplier. And together with SEPS, we will have a project team for the installation. So we can get that information, but right now I do not have that information.
So you did do the procurement? Because it's on the list. Right. So I really would like you to mark that. I would like to know the exact details of where every single piece of equipment for that was installed for the SAPS. Where is it being used? So if needs be, we can go and check. Okay. Right. Then moving on, if we can move then to Annexure F. These are the deviations internally processed by CETA. We've cleaned out a lot of the licensing issue. There was this issue with the supply of color tech paper, paperboard, continuous paper for Beta Print Center. That is your number one or two? Number two, I think. Two and three. Which came to about 9 million rand. Can you tell us about that? Because it says a failed bidding process, is CETA, your corrective response was CETA SEM turnaround plans. What was the story behind that? And thanks.
Let me just get you, which page? Is it the second page and which number?
This is Annexure F. Okay, I'm just dealing with the deviations. So, no, it's the first page of Annexure F. I didn't have the luxury of this in front of me. So Annexure F, it's called, would it be that one? Let me just double check, Jen. I don't want to mislead the house. Yes, thank you. Thank you to my colleague. See, I must listen to my elders, they know better. Alright, so, right, so it is section, yeah, no, that's the problem, is it actually is.
Okay, that's fine, I have an extra F. Mm. Which number are you on? Is it number one and two?
Well, my Annexure F is different to this one. My Annexure F is number... it's number 9. No, sorry, Chi, this is a different list. I don't know where this list comes from. This is very strange. I'm doing what you see, Chi, if I was preparing on this, I'd have been preparing this morning. I was preparing over the weekend. So I'm preparing on the schedule that was sent to us by by CETA on soft copy. So this is Annexure F. It's number 11. I'm sorry, I can't help further than that. I apologize. It doesn't seem to tie in with this. Okay, so this was supply of color tech paper, paper board, continuous paper for Beta Print Center, and the amounts came to nine million, almost 10 million rand. And you say that you had a problem there, the failed bidding process. So can you just explain to us what happened there?
Replacement tender, which was RFB 1376/2050. This was published on the 29th of January 2016, and it closed on the 22nd of February 2016. Everything was completed. There was a recommended bidder in terms of this process, and then at the closing of the bid, we received a letter from that successful bidder, when we've now when we've given them the award letter, and then they said that they won't be able to honor the contract anymore, and hence we then needed to extend the two contracts, which will be for LIP and Ubuntu. Ubuntu paper supply. So that's what happened with those two bids. And then we subsequently reissued a replacement bid and then awarded to new companies. That's what happened with that one.
Okay, if we can move further down the page, your numbers are all quite strange here, but it is the same page. If we go from, that was 11, then it goes 12, 13, 18, 19, 1, I understand it's different quarters. 15, 2, 3, I'm just trying, I'm doing this to help colleagues follow. And then it goes 14, 16, and then there's a 4, quarter 4. Are you with me? All right. Now, that's a very interesting transaction because it says that... It's a sole source. Request to appoint intender for the procurement of intellectual property rights. Okay? I thought those were innate to all humans, you know, you had to procure intellectual property rights from my studies. then apparently it was not approval was not required from National Treasury. The prior government's investment in a particular architecture, but here's the kicker. It was 416 million rand. A deviation of 416 million rand. So can you explain that? And how is it possible the Treasury weren't required for that? I mean, it's a massive amount of money. How is it a deviation? Let's start there.
So the reason why it's a deviation is because we didn't go to the market. That's the reason. This was done.
No, I think that's obvious. First part is obvious. Let's go to the substantive part.
So for us to even start this transaction, we had a letter from National Treasury that we received, obviously from not the office of the Chief Procurement Office.
Sorry, can I interrupt you? How do you procure intellectual property rights? Intellectual property rights is my idea. If I invent something, then yes, I will secure that by way of a patent or whatever. How do you procure the chair's ideas? How do you actually do that?
So what it means is that IP, if it's going to be used in government, we are not going to be paying licenses anymore. That IP now belongs to government. So it's the same thing where we want, going forward, the IP to belong to government. So in this instance, the IP belongs to government. We will not be paying license fee anymore in perpetuity. That system belongs to government. Just to go back to your question, I'm sure you've heard us talking about automation of the procurement process within government, or the SCM processes within government. This is what this system is going to be used for. So we received a letter. I'm just trying to get the exact letter in terms of the date when we received the letter. We received a letter from the National Treasury. I think, if I remember very well, it was in February 2016 when we received this letter. CETA had a contract with Ntenda, which was sort of like an evergreen contract which didn't have an end date. And 48 entities of government, few from the local government side, a few in provinces, and a majority being in national department, were using this system for certain procurement processes. One of the entities that uses this is PetroSA, end-to-end from a beginning of a procurement request up until an award is made and a purchase order is issued to a supplier. So Treasury then said to us, you have this contract with the Ntenda. 48 departments are using this system. We would like to automate the entire government space in terms of the procurement. And we would like, there's a clause in that contract which says we can either enter into a joint venture with Ntenda, or we can acquire the IP for government. So the letter then said, we would like you, CETA, to acquire this system on behalf of government, and then it can be used as a transversal system for end-to-end procurement process. I think hence the deviation, because we went to one, it's a sole source, because then we went to the person who developed the IP, and that IP belonged to them, and now they are handing over that IP and the source code and everything to CETA. That's what happened with the transaction. We needed to have I want to respond to the amount part. There was an amount, the 460 and the 416 million. Part of it is to buy the IP, which was 195 million was to buy the IP, because we as CETA, we do not have the skills in terms of this system. We then enter into a transition period for the maintenance and support for 5 years, which was at an amount of 120 million. And then we also had
resources that will then help us with the deployment of this system into government departments. So the provided us with 12 resources that will help us with that at an amount of 60 million. There was a lot of negotiations in terms of the amount.
I'll get all that, but and once again, please educate me and the committee. So effectively, there's somebody who developed Nintendo, some clever person, and we paid them 195 million for their idea. So once we've got the system, do we still have to pay for IPs? So as Nintendo, is this kind of like, you know, famous artists have a book of music. And famously, Michael Jackson bought the Beatles book. So he has the sole rights to, if you buy a Beatles song on the radio, Michael Jackson's foundation gets some money. He gets all the royalties. And I know Paul McCartney would love to buy it back, but he can't, because he's great. My point is it like that? They didn't tend to go out there and buy a whole lot of IPs, and then said, right, when you buy our system and our idea, it comes with all these IPs. Are they, you know, extra things? Is that how this works? Or do we pay 416 billion rand to get a system that buys IPs and we still have to buy them as we go along?
So there's nothing over and above what we have paid, which we are going to pay to them going forward. So everything relating to this system, it's ours. So the upgrades and the patches and all those things, we will have to do that.
Okay, I think you're misunderstanding me. I'm saying, so Nintendo is a system that helps you buy IP. So let's say Correctional Services has something that they're using. Let's say it's RDOMS. Okay, now RDOMS was replaced by IMS, another corrupt contract. Okay, let's say we want to buy the IP for IMS. So that Jeff Hailing in Bloemfontein doesn't own it anymore. Integratron. Is that included with the Nintendo deal, or do we now have to approach him and say, we want to buy your IP? So we bought a fancy system to help us pick up the call phone and say, Jeff, do you want to sell us IMS? Is that what we've done? I was just trying to understand that. What does the system actually do?
So
it sounds to me like we're just buying stuff. We really need a 416 million rand system to help us buy stuff.
So, this is like an Amazon system. So you will use it to assist in the procurement process. So, if we want to advertise a tender, we will advertise a tender on this system. And the public out there or the companies out there will respond on this system. Evaluation will be done on the system until award. I don't know if I'm clear.
Said it earlier. Okay, so it's a procurement system that you require for the whole of government. So every single department should now use Nintendo, the Nintendo system. The Nintendo IP. Okay. What is it called now?
It's now called G-Commerce.
G-Commerce. Okay. And every department has to use it. They want to advertise something, they go on there. Okay. Thanks.
We haven't, obviously, there's a roll-up plan. We haven't roll out to everybody. So we still need to roll it out to different departments and entities.
Chair, okay, just in the interest of moving on, can we move on to Annex G? This is now the list of deviations for 2017-18. I just want to quickly scan that. I don't want to waste time. licenses again. Okay, I don't know if we've got the same list here or whatever, but number 7 on Anagra G. Yeah. Number 7 on Anagra G, it's quite easy. The renewal of analytical capacities and visualization system, that's via AMIS, solution for SAP's licenses, maintenance and support for 1 year. So 1 year there has cost us 80 million rand. And you've got possible corruption next to that, consequence management, and the suppliers are investigative software solutions. Can you explain to us why you think that's corrupt for 80 million? And what you're doing about it?
This is part of the so investigative software solutions is it's FDA basically. It's owned by Keith Kitching. So this relates to the forensic investigation that is currently happening. Hence, we said possible corruption from line of business side based on the information that we have.
But that investigation is still ongoing?
Yes.
You must not be put off about the announcement about former Commissioner Pashlani. Because that is just the NPA saying we need to get our ducks in a row and we're going to reinstitute it. Okay. All right. Have all those contracts been put on hold? Pending investigation?
Yes. Absolutely.
Does that include Gijima and Kawalesa? Because they're all linked. Not. You seem to.
So the investigation hasn't been extended to Kawalesa and Gijima, those contracts yet. We do want to review the whole service level agreement and look for the bigger contracts there. There's another one that's out on tender at the moment for forensic investigation. So for the forensic partners to be appointed. On this one particular, this payment was upfront annual license fee for that amount, and so that one has now expired. We are busy with litigation right now for the continued use, even post the contract.
If we can go down to number 11. Sorry, before we do that, number 8. The procurement of secure socket layer certificates on behalf of CETA. You've got a contract there with Altec, number 8. It's not for a huge amount of money, but I'd just like to know why you think it's possible corruption. It's for 448,000 rand. You got consequence management and possible corruption. That's really not linked to the FDA thing.
So that's just an initial observation. We need to look at some of the security products that we continuously go for single source, and SSL certificates is part of that. So we not only want to do OEM negotiations or OSM negotiations in the security space, but also look at the partners that we have at the moment.
Number 11, that's a lease extension. Now, this always makes my blood boil because it's almost like you don't have a diary. You don't realize that you do need to do some forward planning. So what happened there? Why did we have to pay, why was there a deviation of 11 million, 11.8 million to East and West Investments? Apparently it was a transition to appropriate premises. But it cost 11 million more than we thought. So what do you get for 11 million office space wise? Yeah. You know, I've got friends in my close proximity who have lots of business premises, and hey, 11 million rand, I'm sure even my colleagues would agree, is a lot of money. So what do you get for 11 million rand that you're paying for? Why are you paying for somebody's lease?
The exact square meters, but this is where our switching center for that region is hosted.
and the office accommodation. So it's both the two together. So, but we can check the square meters and those details. So the reason why we said transition to appropriate premises, there were discussions that were being held between ourselves and the Limpopo government in us setting up a techno park, which the land and the building was going to be given by the Limpopo government. So we couldn't then go and enter into a long-term lease or go and acquire new accommodation, whereas we were in these negotiations with the Limpopo government. So this is something that we are looking at for majority of provinces, where we establish techno parks, and we use that as our office accommodation and also switching centers and data centers. We believe that this in this way we will be able to save money for government. It's similar to the Tucson centers concept.
Okay, so I'm leaving quite a bit of meat on the bone for other colleagues, but I just want to get through the bulk of it. So if we go to Annex H1, the last list we're going to look at. Now, these were listed deviations not supported by National Treasury. Okay? We'll obviously, we can run through them, but right, the SAPS STR lab systems for 24 months. That's labware. 4.3 million. Now, you say a common sole source didn't require NT approval. How can a sole source not require NT's approval? Okay, so who are the labware? Are they the only people who can assist with this particular issue? See, this continuity of service, that needs to be explained very clearly to us. Because continuity of service could just be, well, you know, I drink Coca-Cola now, and I just like to carry on drinking Coca-Cola. But unfortunately, you see, that's my money. But if I'm spending everybody else in the room's money, somebody would say, well, I wouldn't mind a Fanta. So that continuity of service can maybe just be an excuse. So can you explain that particular transaction to us?
Without knowing the exact details, this system is used for DNA analysis. Obviously, if this does not, the system is not available, then it will affect based on the.
So that's exactly what Keith Keating was saying. It doesn't work with me. I'm asking you a question. What is this equipment? Because this is now, remember, it's support of SAPS. One of the big issues you have at the moment is ROFN. Remember ROFN? The torches that need to be serviced monthly, and when we get the manual for the torch, it says turn it on to check battery. Look into it. If you see a light, it's working. I kid you not, that's the maintenance regime when we were paying guys, I think something like 11 million rand a month to do that. And if you went around to the police stations and spoke to the police, they said they hadn't seen the people for months and months and months. So, what support are we getting from LabWare for 4.3 million rand a year, so for 24 months? What are they actually doing? And I expect you to know this. I mean, tell us, how many systems are they supporting? I know that I doubt it's the one in Amazon Torti where I come from, because that place has been flooded 6 times and the place is a total mess. The one in Pinetown has never been built. It's just now a forest and a jungle. So which labs are we talking about, and what? Because I also have other information, which we'll get into not today, that there's a lot of equipment that should be in police stations lying around in labs. So what are they actually looking after for that kind of money?
My understanding is that this is the database of the DNA records that is linked, appropriate question from your side, to the PKM system. So it does form part of the whole review of TITA revisiting the PCHEM system, would also then touch on the LabWare database that hosts the DNA.
Okay, so it's a database. What do you need to do to maintain a database? A database at the end of the day is just a massive Excel spreadsheet, right? Because that's what a database is. These schedules are given as a sort of a database. Okay, you make it easy that you can type in and it's interactive and it comes back to you and you can type in your name or my name or whatever and it comes back. But effectively, so what maintenance is this? This is not like somebody coming and checking and putting a bit of oil in and a bit of water like a car. What is the actual maintenance they do? You know, the South African taxpayer needs to know this. What are we paying LabWare to do? Do they pop in, look at the computer and say, okay, now that's nice, move on, or what do they actually do?
So I don't have the exact details in front of me, but my understanding is that it is support. So there is something like daily maintenance on a database where you do integrity checks and make sure that the data stays intact.
See, I'm sorry I have to interrupt you again, and I'm sure you think I'm rude, but I'm not trying to be. I'm just trying to save time. You don't know. Now you're guessing and you're speculating. And I'm sorry to put this at your door, but you are the IT guys. You're supposed to be telling me that there are technicians who come in from LabWare and they do da-da-da-da-da to earn 4.32 million rand every 24 months. You should be able to tell me specifically what those people do. Not just, I'm not trying to be rude, but you really should know this information because you're procuring it and you're agreeing to it. And then you're saying you don't need to talk to Treasury about it either. Now, you know, is this the proverbial torch, or is it real work? We really need to get to the bottom of this, and you should know this.
We will come back with the answers on this one.
But
you can't get blood out of a stone, but that's not acceptable. It really isn't. Not at this level. You know, we're at the apex here. You're at the apex. That's not acceptable that you don't know. Chief, can I continue? Do you have something?
Yeah, just a minute. I'm saying we postponed last week because you were going to prepare yourself. So expect that you should actually be able to assist us with details, especially since you are the ones who requested the deviation. So you should have details in terms of saying, yeah, we agree, we accept. Because I think the sense that I have is that it's almost as if when dealing with the SAPS, you are always led by the nose. The SAPS will decide and say, this is what we need, and then CETA will just oblige. That's why now when you have to explain why LabWare is a sole supplier of what, you yourselves are not clear, because that's what the SAPS demanded. So we need this. So in the relationship, you as the IT people, so actually not leading the SAPS in terms of what are the actual requirements and what needs to be done. So, let him finish and then I'll come to you. Okay? Yeah.
About that, Honorable Professor, I wanted to add on what you have finished. Besides, we are using your own spreadsheet. This is not our spreadsheet. So it means that before you come to the meeting, you go prepare yourself on what you are, the information that you are giving us. So when you come in here and you don't have information, we ask ourselves, who wrote this for you? Because we did something that we don't do normally as a committee. We gave you a week more to go and prepare yourself. You come in here and you still not, you don't have information. Who's supposed to have that information?
These are the deviations from CETA itself, not from anybody else. It's from you. I just wanted to add that, Shepherd. Obviously, we prepared the spreadsheets. There are two technical developers that comes through when there are issues with the system. The system is used specifically for, I want to just read the exact thing. It affects rape cases, crime index and references, and obviously if it's not working, then the SAPS won't be able to go to court with the evidence that is required. So we there are technicians that are allocated. Actually, the amount that was awarded for this was never the 4.3 million. We awarded it a lesser amount because we then negotiated with them. We looked at the type of skills that these people have, and we then said, no, the 4.3 is a bit high. It has to go down. We contracted it around, I think it was less than 3 million rand for those resources.
Okay, just why did you not have 3 points, less than 3 point something on the schedule then? Why did you have 4.3?
I think maybe the mistake that we did was we needed to, we thought it's a good idea to maintain the request that we sent to National Treasury and then explain the reasons for the differences in amount if required. Because then you will have a list that you would have seen from National Treasury that is showing 4.3, whereas our list is showing something else. So I think that was our mistake, because we thought it would be better to maintain the list that we sent to Treasury. And remember, you wanted the reasons why we would have entered into a contract if National Treasury did not approve.
Yeah, actually, you know, the thing is, it compromises the integrity of your information.
Can you tell
us one figure? Just a minute.
Yes,
go ahead. Hello. Where are you leaving us now? Explain to us the truth of the matter rather than lying to us and telling us that maybe should we blame Treasury or should we blame you? Where are you taking us to? Well, I've been listening to you for some time now, and it doesn't seem that you seem to know what you are doing at this moment. Where are you leading us? Or where are you leading us to? Are you taking responsibility or not? Because if you send wrong information to Treasury on the expense of the taxpayers, why do you expect us to know? Can you give us proper direction? Because you allowed the CEO not to come in, you act as the CEO. So now tell us the truth. It's what they expect from you. Not to be misled.
Chairperson, when we send the request, maybe I should explain, when we send the request to National Treasury, it's before the procurement process, because it's a pre-approval. So it's before it goes for adjudication, and when it goes to adjudication, the adjudication committee members can then say, go back and negotiate, and the award amount might be different, but we will never go and award more than what we have requested from the National Treasury. So from where I'm sitting, the amount that is here is what we requested to National Treasury, which was not granted, the 4.3 million.
Okay. Round up? Yeah.
I still would like to know, how many labs are there in the country? Do you know?
I don't know.
I think there's two or three maximum. There's one in Pretoria. Okay. I'm pretty sure if we say two or three, that's where it is. One in Amanzimtoti, and then one in Pretoria, and there might be another one somewhere. Okay? So I'm still, I really would like you to get back to us in terms of exactly, if it's a database, so the SAP is not of any IT people in their employer. I know that's probably scary because I know for a fact that when a old friend of mine, Brigadier Keith Flack, retired from the SAPS, gee, you'd love to hear this. When he retired from the SAPS, that was the last forensic auditor the SAPS had in their service. The SAPS currently have no forensic auditors at all in their entire service to do this sort of work at all. No qualified people. So, are there no IT people that we have to use outside companies to maintain a database? Can you comment at all on this? Okay, you can't. But can you please provide us with an exact report at the time the chair determines exactly what this money is spent on? Because this is exactly the kind of thing we have with Rosen. Okay, then moving on, I'm very concerned at number three. That was for broadband InfraCo to the tune of 1.9 billion rand. Now, there you said not awarded to go out on open market under your comments column. What concerns me is that, please help me understand, was it even considered to try and award broadband InfraCo 1.9 billion rand with the work as a single source? Because it says you're not supported and then not awarded. So, unless I'm reading this wrong, it seems to indicate that you tried to award this to Broadband InfraCo and then Treasury said no, and then you decided not to award it, now you're going to go to market. So there was an attempt to give it to them. Am I right in assuming that? Why on earth do we give one company 1.9 billion rands worth of work? Surely they're not the only broadband guys around.
So, Broadband InfraCo is the current service provider that we entered into a 10-year contract with for our core network. So, the current contract, I think it's going to end in 2023. So, in order for us to cater for SA Connect requirements, where the core network needs to be upgraded to a certain capacity, we looked at extending the current contract that we have with Broadband InfraCo, not in terms of the contract period, but in terms of the value within the contract period to cater for SA Connect. This was the main reason for us wanting to deviate, because we are saying we have a current contract with this service provider, and therefore if you are going to upgrade the same part, it doesn't make sense to then go out to the market for something within that same pipe to award to somebody else. But we are going to test the market.
Just a minute. The letter from National Treasury, have you gone through it again? Because the reasons they give for declining are quite telling. So irrespective of what you are explaining, I thought you would talk to the reasons that National Treasury has given. Or actually, to say, well, yeah, we had made a mistake, and leave it at that, instead of explaining. Because I think that's what you said to National Treasury, and still National Treasury said no. And with the reasons that they've given here, I don't think we should even venture into explaining why you needed to take a BBI.
Chair, I don't have that letter from Treasury, but can you Can you take us into your confidence and tell us why, what the actual reasons were?
I really, the actual reason is what I've said. The reasoning behind the whole idea was that broadband Infraco is the current service provider that we have an existing contract that is still valid until 2023. So if for the core network, because this is only for the core network, which is the...
What you're doing, you're explaining why you wanted to go with broadband Infraco. I'm asking you, why the Treasury say no? That's what we want to know. I understand what you're saying about broadband Infraco. I don't really buy it because it's a huge amount of work and it sounds like something in perpetuity again. But why did Treasury say no?
Venture to say that it is lack of a competitive process, hence Treasury sent us.
Okay, I'm basically done, but can I come back to the second? I just want to see, I see you've got a, the Treasury did not support the extension of the Bowman's contract. Why is that? And it's still continuing.
They said the reasons are not justifiable. Why we say it's agent and why we are saying it should be extended. So yeah, those were the reasons mentioned to say the reasons that we have given were not justifiable.
Would you agree that they've done quite a bit of good work in your SEM space to try and clean things up? The kind of consequence management we as a committee like. Would you agree that that's a fair statement to make?
Both in SEM and HCM.
Okay, so why would we stuff up the extension of their contract and now put them in an irregular position? If you appreciate their work, what happened here? Is that it puts their continued work under a cloud, and certainly that's not helpful or productive.
Maybe National Treasury can respond.
See, I don't want to belabor that particular point, but, you know, we have a situation. This committee demands consequences. And finally, we have an environment where things are starting to happen, and then I don't know if it's sabotage, I don't know what's going on, but anyway. We'll leave that there. Chair, I just wanted to conclude by saying that, you know, I'm getting the impression that CETO are taking this thing seriously, and I get the impression from our engagement that you're trying to do the right thing. But I've got to say, when I see an issue of 1.9 billion rand being applied to Treasury without going to market, that assurance becomes a little bit shaky. So I would like you just to move from the CETO of the old to hopefully the CETO of the new, and sort out this license renewal thing, even if it's a gradual process to bring those costs down. But as I said to you, I've left a lot of meat on the bone for this one for follow-ups, but these were, I think, the main areas we needed to traverse. Thank you, Jim.
All right. Thank you very much. Any follow-ups, comrades, on deviations? All right. Let's do this.
Hello. I just want to caution to not to run conclusions before all of us is responding to the matter.
All right.
Because that is not how the committee functions. We gave you an opportunity to ask questions, but to conclude on our behalf would be very problematic.
Sir, I was out of line. I'll make comments later. Thank you.
Okay. That's fine. Any inputs? So, Comrade Kuno, Ross, okay, I'll give the two of you, then we can move to Comrade Chilo. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have several questions to Sita, and I wish I was as optimistic as Comrade Tim was. And the more they answered questions, it shows the more that, I mean, it actually says to us as the committee, we are right by saying that Sita is in problems, and we really need to get into the bottom of problems. And I think as the board, you are not hands-on as you are supposed to be. That is why from the onset, Chairperson, I was serious about having the CEO in front of us here, because it seems like the board is not hands-on with the issues. But my first question would be, who initiates and approves a procurement process to be in CETA? Is it CETA or the government? And who determines the budget? And anyone from the technical, who comes up with the technical specifications and adjudicates and approves the tenders? So I think that's the basis. If we understand that, then we'll have other follow-up questions. Can I get the...
Yeah, it respond to...
Thanks, ma'am. The procurement process, there are two ways of procuring through CETA. The first one is a procurement agency. Where is the procurement agency, the accounting office of the department then sign off? But I'm going to explain how do they get to the sign off of a contract. So they will give us the tasking, which will have the budget. We also then ask for a government to see that indeed there is a budget, some sort of a system generated document. In a procurement agency, they then also draft the spec. Their own committees approve the spec, bring it to CETA. CETA then reviews that spec, and then it goes back to the accounting officer for sign-off. And then from there, it comes back to CETA for advertising of the bid. CETA then advertises the bid. The technical evaluation, once the bid is closed, it's also done by the department. Majority of the members, according to the CETA regulations, are the people from the department. And then with, in most instances, with one or two people from CETA, being maybe a technical person and an SCM specialist. Once that is done, the adjudication is also done by CETA. Depending on the amount, it then goes to different committees. So if it's above 100 million, if it's about 500 million, it actually ends at the board in terms of recommending that successful service provider to the accounting officer of the department. Then the accounting officer of the department will then appoint the service provider. Then we've got a different, another procurement where CETA is now the contracting agent. So if CETA is a contracting agent, in most instances, I think if we look at SEPs and DOD, CETA is the contracting agent. What happens in that instance, everything from the only thing that we will get from the department will be the requirements, including the budget. And then from there, CETA develops the specification. It goes through our bid specification committee, and then it gets approved. But before, once we get the requirement from the department, we usually have a process called a procurement business case, where it moves from the line of business responsible for that area, and then it will then go as depending on the delegation, it will go as far as the CEO or the executive consent to approve the procurement or the procurement process. So the rest of the things are done within CETA. Evaluation is done by CETA people. The adjudication is also done by CETA and the award thereof in terms of our delegation. The contract also is drafted by CETA and entered into between CETA and the service provider. So we've got those two streams of procurement as per our regulation.
Thanks for the explanation. It shows that you understand exactly what you are required to do as CETA, what needs the kind of services that you need from CETA. Then why all this wrongdoing? Why do you deviate so much? When you understand it, you understand the process well. You already have the budget plans. You have the project plans. Why all this? According to you, as the CFO of CETA, why all the problems that you have in CETA?
What is the driver of the deviations? When you step back and look, and say, but why are we having this?
There are different reasons that have been identified as the reasons for the deviations. Even by us just analyzing the deviations that have happened. If you look just for 2017-18, almost 50% of the deviations were sole source, meaning we go directly to the OEM or it's for things.
Sorry to interrupt you. I'm not. You know, the acronyms are a serious problem. So if you can just say OEM and then just say what is OEM, so that we can all be in the same house.
Okay, I apologize for that. I mean, that's the second time I'm being told the same thing. So the OEM is the original equipment manufacturers. So this is where we see government has invested, money into a specific system, for instance. So if I can give an example, like in CETA, we use Oracle as our ERP system. And for the renewal of the Oracle licenses, we will have to go directly to Oracle until such time that we say, the return on investment that we initially made is no longer, we've utilized it and we got what we wanted from the system. That means that we'll have to go back to that original equipment manufacturer or original software manufacturer. So majority of them are around that. However, we have also seen that some extensions are due to CETA not doing the things on time. Like, for instance, we will get the business case from the client way in advance, like 12 months before the contract expires, for us to renew, and we find that we do not do that on time. So we've seen majority of those. We've also seen majority where our turnaround time in terms of the SCM process takes long. It's very long. Meaning from a specification to the time when we award a bid, we find that it's taking us 8 months. And there are different reasons that we can see from our own analysis. That's just one of the reasons. I'll talk to the corrective actions after. The other reason I think we have seen is possible corruption, because if you continue, if a supplier knows that they will continue getting the business, there's something that is going on, and we've seen that with the SCM investigation or the supply chain investigation that we have conducted in terms of forensic work. I think the other reason that we have identified, and I think it's in one of the slides in terms of our presentation, it's where from a technical point of view, the spec was not defined properly, and we cannot. I think as
CETA, we are we are supposed to be the experts when it comes to ICT, and therefore we shouldn't be taking the spec out to the market knowing that there might not be a response. So we have seen a lot of specs that were not, the technical specifications that were not up to scratch to go out to the market, and hence you will not get the responses. So I think those are some of the reasons that we have picked up.
Okay.
Listen, the time, you said your client would be clear in terms of what they want, but the problem is with CETA. So those people, the officials who are supposed to be taking this, consider time and the plans properly, where are they? Are they still part of CETA? Have they been disciplined? What has happened to them? Because they are costing CETA big time. And I think that should be the question to the board.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member Khonong. I was going to say two basic issues. One is poor contract management. We have a serious contract management at CETA. And at one stage, we were wondering whether it is incompetence or otherwise, but it is deliberate. It starts from bid specification, that when the bid is being written, it is already being written for somebody else, and it is therefore manipulated, or they go out to market and tell us that nobody can respond, or write it in a particular manner that it is designed for somebody else. So it is the human element that is critical to it all, and hence we have tried, and we're in the process of having introduced the G-commerce, try to automate everything so that we remove the, minimize the interactive part from the human, element. And it is true, in some of the bids, the adjudication is being done in majority by the respective government department, for an example. All we do is just sit there and preside on the, but to chair. You'd find that it has already come to us, that has been, it has already been cooked. For an example, when I became chair of the board procurement committee 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I found double dipping. When I sent it back, there were discovered more double dipping. And I said that if it happens when it comes to at the level of at the board, it means the entire system, one way or the other, has already in essence been corrupted. Now, this is what has happened with the deep dive in the investigation in the procurement space, that quite a number of people have either left the organizations, those who have resigned, others, there might be criminal charges that are pressed, in essence, against them. So if we eliminate the lot of that human element from bid specification, starting from there, then we are in a process that we can be able to control the flow through.
The way you are coming up with a thought that I don't think it's possible now for CETA. It's a good thought, and I think it will help CETA, but you are not moving towards making sure that you achieve exactly what you are saying. It's good to have good thoughts up there, but if you do not translate that into your system, I think we'll be going round the circles day in, day out. We'll be talking about the same thing. Yes, we know where the problem is, but we're not doing anything about that. And it's obvious that there are officials within CETA who are in the supply chain who are making sure that the system collapses. And my question is that what are you doing about those particular officials? Have they been punished? What is happening? Do you have any investigations currently going on for those officials? But, okay, I don't know if I should wait for that because I have two more questions just on...
Yeah, no, let them respond okay. And then you can go to your questions.
Thank you. Ma'am, we have lost a considerable number of SCM staff already as a result of the forensic. So we're left almost with 50% of our staff in SCM. As the chairman has alluded to, however, it doesn't stop there because in the bid specification
side that wouldn't be the ACM people, its lines of business. And as I've mentioned before, we think that we also would need to go there with the forensic to make sure that there is consequence management, as you rightly point out. But the first part we have definitely done.
You know, when we started in the fifth parliament, that was our emphasis, especially the first year, that we are going to make sure that whoever has transgressed the law, they have to be dealt with harshly. And I think as a committee we have not done that very well. Because we find that somebody who has done something wrong in CETA, they are, and when there are investigations, they run from CETA, go to another entity or department in government, and nothing happens to them. When we are dealing with forensics or any investigation, then we can't get hold of them. I think we need to find a way of making sure that whoever did something wrong with CETA, we have to call them as parliament. If they're still alive, if they're still citizens of the country, or working anywhere in the in any department, we have to find a way of calling them back in. And but we can't do that without getting enough information from any an entity. So I think we need to really pursue that chapter, so that if you really want to get into a bottom of all the things, and we are serious about taking consequences seriously, we really need to do that. But you know,
I thought they would reconfirm the fact that the current forensic investigation, they will get a report at the end of June. And only when we have that report will we have details, and then go into that element in terms of what action is being taken against these individuals that have been identified. So I think we'll still have a discussion on that front once the report is out.
Chairperson, I'm really looking forward to that. In the beginning, when we were answering Honorable Broughton, sir, you talked about the scope not well defined, especially when it comes to licenses. I just want to know, I mean, later on when you talked about broadband, then you knew exactly how many years they have been contracted for. In fact, it was longer than any other licenses that you have. You said you were only giving them 3 years licenses instead of giving them longer periods, when you know that they are going to take longer. But it's different when it comes to broadband. But yet again, when you have given them more years, they still want to expand to more other years. What is happening to the licenses, especially as far as broadband is concerned? Because I think you were contradicting in terms of answering, if you really listen to the way that you have responded in the beginning. And the last question, Chairperson, would be on leases. How do you expand a lease for both accommodation in Polokwane and Durban? The initial lease amount was 1 million. It went up to 26. So it means the value of contract extension is 11 million. And I would also want to hear from National Treasury on how we are dealing with that. Look at Durban. From 7 to 99 million, and the value of extension is 58 million. Can you really balance us as a committee? I really don't.
Why don't we deal with extensions when Comrade Shulani comes in?
Oh, okay. So it's not part of the deviations, because it's in their sheet, Chairperson, the Annexure D and Annexure F of deviations.
Oh, no. All right. That used extension. So
okay.
I thought, but if it's deviations, yeah.
It's part, yeah. That's what they've written, the Annexure D, list of deviations submitted to National Treasury,
fine.
Thanks.
Sure. It's Annexure D, which number? So that we
person was on broadband and the licenses.
Yeah.
Everybody's sure I get.
Yeah.
The second one was on an extra F. Number 15 and 16. And that's when I said also if National Treasury can come in. Maybe as we're asking that even on Nintendo, National Treasury should just explain and take us further in tender, which is on still on an extra F,
all right.
Number 4.
No, that's fine. Let's get a response.
And look at the amounts, Chairperson. They are way too big. So if they can really take us through that.
All right. Yeah.
On the issue of broadband, firstly, the reference to 3 years was mainly for licenses. So when we look at broadband, it's infrastructure. And for infrastructure, we normally enter into a longer-term contract. So if we look at the broadband that we have done here in the Western Cape, we also entered into a 10-year contract because the return on investment and the you need to, it can only be realized if you do it long term, not short term. So that was the reference that I was making when I was looking at the licenses. The licenses part, we've always done 3 years because I think for the reasons that I've mentioned previously in terms of the lack of market intelligence, and on all the other things that I've mentioned. But for infrastructure projects, we tend to enter into a longer-term contract, and that's what we did with Broadband Infraco. Just to state that Broadband Infraco is a state-owned entity, and I think that was even the other reason why we felt we needed to deviate and expand that contract in order to cater for the SA Connect scope. So I think National Treasury can then answer further in terms of that
what
issue.
The issue of the leases?
Yeah. So I think also when you come to the leases, if we know that we are going to be in a certain town for longer, let me just go to the Durban office specifically. For the Durban office, we did go out to the market, and the spec was not responsive. In most of the, even here in the Western Cape, went out to the market to get a building which can cater for our data center and the office accommodation, and we couldn't get what we were looking for. And I think in hindsight, when we look at the specification, we found that we wanted a green building. Normally, a green building, you will have to build it yourself and put the specifications that you require. So I think CETA, we are re-looking the whole property, our property portfolio in a different way, in where we are including the Technoparks concept and having our own building. So we've seen where we have our own building, there's a lot that we can do in terms of making sure that those buildings are of the required standard that we are looking for. So I think if we look at the Durban lease specifically, I think we've been there since 2002. So hence the amount it's so high. We did try to test the market, and that did not yield results that we were looking for. We are in discussions with trade part in terms of how can we work with them in terms of being in their area and establish a techno park together with them.
I'll come to you, Kumbhikikan.
Yeah, but I just wanted to make a follow-up on this response, because to me it doesn't make sense. To start with, when you entered into a lease agreement with that company, the understanding is there is a contract between the two. Now, you are saying to us, you went out and tested the market. Can you clarify the two?
So let's say we had a contract that had an end period. It was for five years, for instance, or let's say 3 years, because that's normally what we go out to the market for. Before that contract came to an end, we then advertised a bid in order for us to move out of that building and go into a new building. However, that bidding process did not yield a positive response, meaning we didn't get somebody who was proposing a new building for us. So we then, if you look at what we're doing here, we're extending the same building after the bidding process failed.
Treasury, is there anything you would want to talk to in tender contract?
The tender was not done through deviation. That's why you'll see in our list it's not there as a deviation. But the principle will still be the same, to say if you are saying there's intender who has built this system, is there any other supplier who may have similar system? And if there are suppliers who have similar system, then you have to test the market and they compete, and then you go to the other one. With the buildings, it's exactly the same. They enter into contracts for 5 years or 10 years. Before the lease expires, they need to test the market. There may be new buildings around there, or there may be other suppliers who are intending to build new. Therefore, you test the market just to establish whether are there other potential buildings. If they are there, then you will have to follow, the bid process. When they come to us, they're just saying, we want to deviate because of one, two. Then we will say you can deviate. If you have advertised, for example, and you couldn't get any bidder, you can still deviate and go straight to estate agents and ask them, are there other buildings that they are aware, because we did not receive bids. If that option is not there, that's where now they'll say, in the meantime, because we could not get anything new, therefore we're going to extend the contract for the existing supplier or landlord for a certain period. But the principle, when we give them, say, yes, you can deviate, but follow a fair and transparent process and make sure that the rates that are charged are market related. Even if previously they entered into a lease in the market, the rate was not market related. When they extend, if the opportunity again to say, but when we assess the market, you can charge us 90 rand when the market is saying 65 rand, like what happened with those leases in Northern Cape, where you'll find that the rate was, for example, 40 rand per square meter, then they were using 65 rand, 80 rand. If you extend on that basis, obviously then it becomes a problem, because the board should be able to say, have you assessed that the rates are reasonable and competitive before they approve?
Okay, well, that's fine. Ross?
Thank you, Chair. I think the issues have been dealt with, but thank you very much for the presentation. I think it was informative today. Chairperson, I'd be interested to know, regarding the comments, ma'am, that you've made on the economies of scale and that you've saved the fiscus 2.5 billion over that period. But is it not in contradiction with the competitive bidding process? If you talk about the economies of scale, and we've seen the value of the contracts, the massive amounts, and of course you enter into economies of scale with, is it Oracle on a long-term basis? And it's very technical that you need those support. But certainly, where does it infringe in terms of competitive bidding process? Because you have, is it not two competing ideologies, I would say? Perhaps if you can just take us through that. And in which areas do you then enforce the economies of scale as opposed to competitive bidding process? Now, is it in terms of the licenses only? I thought that was something that we need to take note of, because you want to have these economies of scale, you want long-term security, you want to establish some confidence with these service providers also. But then in terms of maintenance and support, you have then a different approach. I'd just like to have your views on that, and then I'll have a follow-up question. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. So it is quite a difficult one to balance the because both are, in terms of Section 217 of the Constitution, you need to, you know, award the contract in a cost-effective manner, and it has to be a competitive process. So I think in the space that we are in, so if I'll go back to the issue of Microsoft. If we look at Microsoft, the competitor for Microsoft previously was Novell. If we talk about emails, for instance, or Outlook. So in that instance, it will be a good idea to have this framework agreement that we are talking about, the original equipment manufacturer or software manufacturer agreement with both Novell and Microsoft. Actually, we do have a framework agreements for both. So if a department is invested or is already utilizing Microsoft, they will then use the Microsoft framework agreement. If they are they are using Novell, they will then go into Novell. That is same for any other equipment like the network equipment. We've entered into framework agreement with Cisco, for instance, is the first one, but we are going to enter into agreement with all these other original equipment manufacturers. So in doing this, you are saying, here is my muscle as government. I've got so much that I'm spending with you already, because whatever that we are talking about is the spending that government is already investing in these companies. So it will be a good idea, and it's actually an excellent idea, to go and negotiate with those big spenders or those people that government is spending a lot of money with them, and then get the right discount. With Microsoft, we actually, if you were government, you were getting 21%. With the negotiation that we did, everybody is getting more than 40% in terms of discount out of the list price. So, and it's something that as CETA we are monitoring on behalf of the entire government. When we've downloaded those list prices into the G-commerce platform, and then departments then buy, if they are buying Microsoft, they go to that G-commerce and do the buying, similar to how Amazon works. So when it comes to services, we're saying anybody can do the services, and actually Microsoft would have accredited service providers, and we believe that this is a space for SMMEs to penetrate, and we therefore wouldn't go to Microsoft when we want services. We would then go to the bigger market for services. So we've separated the licensing from the services.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'd just like to, I'd be interested to know whether you sense any form of collusion because of the scarce skills at this high level in terms of and what how do you address that, perhaps through Treasury, to say that there's a sense of collusion? Like, you will remember the accusations that we had when we had the World Cup, just a couple of those huge construction firms, and later emerged some collusion in this regard. Is it the same in your industry as well? I'd just like to perhaps establish that. And then just one then follow-up question.
Okay.
We have seen one or two of those, and normally what we do is we refer those to the Competition Commission, and then we've seen even one instance where we ended up disqualifying certain service providers because we could see that there was collusion, and based on the advice from the Competition Commission, we couldn't go on with some of the bids. So it's there, it's happening,
but we are able to pick some of those up during the adjudication of different bids.
Thank you, Chair. And then there were some remarks with regards to the changing of the business model, but I wouldn't like to go there. I would like to go to the remarks that eventually said we do not have the skills in a certain area. Now, what exactly is the skills competency in CETA as we speak? And I'd like you to clarify it in terms of, do you use consultants and how often do you use consultants? And we've seen half of your staff left when there was a forensic investigation. And sometimes when people don't know the job, they tend to be engaging in corruption, etc., and protecting their own interest in the short term, their own turf. Do you use consultants, and how often, and what is the cost of that consultants? Just in terms of your competency skills and the cost of consultants.
We can provide the detail, but consultants' budget is around 100 million, but I can get the exact details in terms of the areas where the consultants are being used. We do use a lot of consultants in on this original equipment manufacturer negotiations, because you need somebody who understands the industry in terms of the licensing regimes. Somebody's got a muscle in terms of knowing what the UK is getting in terms of discounts versus other countries. As I've mentioned, we in terms of development of systems, complementing our own staff, we have appointed those companies that I've mentioned, 100 or so of those companies, that will then complement our own technical developers in developing different systems that we want to develop.
Last one, Chairperson, just in terms of your answer, then do you have people complementing your own competency skills? And then you've indicated that you draft your contracts also in terms of... But I'm just interested to know, when it comes to the board, and you said you sent some, let's say, collusion in terms of what is presented in terms of contracts, and you could sense that there's some irregular actions being taken. In bringing in the outsourced contingent then, does it not help to prevent corruption, or does it increase corruption? Because certainly, and in drafting the contracts, is that outsourced to a legal firm then? Or do you have your own legal experts, or you draft your own contracts? Okay, that's encouraging, but perhaps just to follow up on that.
In complex contracts, we do engage legal firms. Like the contract with the intender, we had to involve a legal firm to assist us with drafting that contract, because we felt that it's not a space where we've entered into before. So we do engage legal firms in drafting contracts. However, we do have our own legal department with the relevant skills, but sometimes we find that is not enough for complex transactions.
All right. I'll come to you after him.
I won't be long. From the board, given the scenario that the lady has sketched out, what has the board been doing in relation to this matter? Have you read the National Development Plan? Have you understood that by 2030 we need to be reporting back to the country about this plan? But CETA doesn't seem to have the capabilities. What are you saying as a board? Because even in skills, consultants, certain capabilities, consequences, and the collusion taking place, it talks of a CETA that is in trouble. But this is a CETA that has the capabilities of doing this work that is up.
Thank you very much, Honorable Boy. We have been juggling with the problem as a board. First was to try to create stability in the organization, because we inherited a very
relatively unstable. We have done a deep dive in terms of the level of the skills complement. We have tried to also eliminate the human factor in going to try to automate, for instance, our procurement system using the GE platform. We have, ideally, when I came on board, my passion was research, development, and innovation, for an example, so that we are solutions providers to the problems, the challenges of the country, but we seem to be bogged down by historical and institutional issues that have been there from time immemorial, because the CETA is a creature of statute, and some of the people who inherited in some of the departments in the building up of CETA, including the levels of skills, is but limited. For us to be able to turn that whole thing around, we tried. We've implemented a new business model where we are trying to kill this mindset that CETA is only there but to procure, because that tends to be the thinking across the organization, even within the recruitment. And targeting, because the people's organization, we started with HS, with human capital management, in trying to clean that, how we recruit some of the best people to be able to join the organization. A little bit difficult in view of the perception out in the market of what CETA is all about and CETA entails, but we have been able to attract one or two capable people, and some of them, when they do arrive inside CETA, they find it very difficult to stay because of the inherent historical problems that have been there, because there has been a lot of javelin throwing we have discovered. But that particular exercise of trying to clean up, as it were, has taken much of the attention of the organization. As against improving in terms of its core mandate. We, as I say, we've been in an investigation that has been under investigation. We're seeing only what we're paying for Bowman and Gilfin. We've been paying the SIU for the past 3 or 4 years. I think it was about 10 to 12 million rands per annum, as it were, where I begged them, I said, as you continue investigation, if there are things that you do find out that are irregular, improper, tell us timely so that we can make timely interventions instead of us waiting until the report is given to the head of state who has initiated the investigation, as it were, so that we can nip some of the issues in the bud. So we are seized. We have been said any cancellation, for instance, tender cancellations, because we've been battling with this, that no cancellation will be made unless the board is informed of the reason why, because we suspected that there is manipulation. If they see certain people are not getting what they're supposed to get, or it's not going in a particular direction, all of a sudden a tender is cancelled, and then we're into an emergency procurement process.
All right.
Or procedure.
Okay. No, that's fine.
Who are you talking to? There's been ministers. Who are you telling this story to? Have you written to Treasury? Or is it the first time that you're putting it in front of Parliament? Maybe what you should do, additional before, is to give a breakdown of these problems in a more written form to SCOPA, so that you can look into it, so that if you decide to assist, we know exactly what you're talking to us. So we'll plead with you to do a written outline of the nature of the problems that are here. Because we do have an attitude toward CETA, but it won't be justifiable if the nature of the problems you're outlining are not being shared with all of us in a more proper way, so that you can see how we can process it. But have you ever spoken to ministers?
Yes, we have spoken to everybody who wants to listen. We've spoken to our ministers, to the DG. Even when our people are being threatened and the death threats and everything else, as we begin to investigate human capital, we have done just about every other thing. Went to national to NIA or at the farm, you know, to inform them, give them the details, to the extent that we had to go to use our own resources to try and secure, because then nobody would want to come in and work for us or want to serve us for fear of their own safety and or security. So we have. And going forward, if we don't get it right, it's going to be very difficult to attract the best talent to come and serve us. But we'd like to create an environment within CETA that even some of us staff were worried what will happen with the new business model, say, with other directors who are continuing, though some of us might be coming to the end of our term, that there will be permanency, so to speak. And I'm glad that we've been, despite everything else, been able to maintain some semblance of the regular staff, because the higher the turnover, then you are open. You open up the organization to all kinds of things.
Okay. All right.
Thank you humbly for this support.
All right. Comrade Kikan. And then we'll go to Comrade Chula for the
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, I need clarity on this forensic investigation. I also heard you talking about it. I take it that you have outsourced this to a specialist company that does that. If that is the case, I just need, because most of the departments, when they come before us, they will tell us about forensic investigation. And at the end, you don't get conclusion on the matter. You promised us that we'll be getting a report that is on this forensic investigation. My question is, what are the terms of reference of this forensic investigation? It starts when and it would end when? So that we know exactly as to what is it that we're talking about. Because we don't want you to come back, that is to us here, and say, here's a forensic investigation that does not talk to the issues that we have, that is raised here. That would be my first question.
Thank you, sir. There's a number of investigations. Firstly, Bowman's was appointed to do a forensic investigation into the Human Capital Department because we realized if we wanted to embark on a cleanup exercise that even our Human Capital would need to assist us with that, with the employee relations and disciplinary proceedings that would need to take place. We will refresh the outcome of that investigation. It was fully concluded. We had a number of people resign and being dismissed and two criminal cases opened. But we can do that at the end of June. We'll bring those results back with the current ones. We then also appointed Sihanre, who was a more technical forensic. They do imaging of computers and so on. They did a whole big investigation together with Bowman. Their scope was in SCM. We'll bring the results also of that. There's a couple of outstanding disciplinary hearings that still need to take place that was linked to the FDA cases. So we were requested by the IPID and NPA not to proceed with the internal disciplinaries because they wanted to use some of the evidence in the external case. And right now, the scope of the final forensic that you're asking about, we appointed Bowman Gilfillan. Sorry, I need to go back to SCM, but I'll do that just now. Bowman Gilfillan right now is doing a forensic on the FDA-related companies, of the Rofin contract, of the ISS that we saw earlier today, and that forensic report, as the chairman alluded to, will be submitted at the end of June. So we can bring all those results. The one that I omitted now, we also appointed Funduzzi. They did the SCM of the regions, and I've also requested them to bring a final report at the end of June to our Audit and Risk Committee meeting. So the SCM was both in head office, which was Sihanre and Bowman, and then in the regions, which was Funduzzi.
Okay, no, thank you. As long as they are not open-ended, because this is what we are getting from a number of departments who come before us. They like this word, forensic investigation. The second issue is on what the Honorable Kuno raised, on the issue of the lease agreement. I still don't understand what you are trying to say to us. Because initially, when my friend Tim was when he was asking you questions, you said you do have internal capacity, you are doing your own specifications. Now the question is, you for instance, if you are looking for a building in, let's look at the Eteguini one. Obviously, you will have to go out, do your own research, before you even, that is compile a document that this is the office that we want, that is blah, blah. Now, in your response, when you were responding to the question from, that is Honorable Kuno, you are saying, in some cases, you find that you don't get what you want. Now the question is, you went out, you looked for a specific office that you want, you occupied that office, and now the contract comes to an end. And when the contract comes to an end, you are saying you can't find a suitable office that is in the area where you are, and that is why you would apply for deviations. I still don't understand that is all that. Can you please clarify that for me? Because no one is saying to you, go and occupy that office. You did your own research and you said, this is suitable, that is for our business. Now, suddenly, it's no more suitable for your business.
Okay, so, so we currently in the Eteguini building, and we then don't, we've got a lease agreement that ends, let's say, 31 May 2018. We then go out to the market, and I think what you're talking about brings a very good suggestion. We go out to the market, when we go out to the market, that specification will be perhaps exactly what we are occupying currently, meaning in terms of the square meterage and maybe not the floors, in terms of how many number of floors we are occupying, mainly on the square meterage in terms of how we are going to accommodate the equipment and the, from the switching center point of view, and the staff. That process, we will be doing it while we are, we'll draft a specification, but it's mainly a desktop exercise that we have been doing. We don't go, I don't think we have the capability within our facilities management department for people to go out and check if the, wherever that we are going to wherever we want to a building, wherever we want a building, there are buildings of that nature. What we do is we go out to the market, and we are thinking that the market will respond the way we want, and that has not yielded any results. And I think I take your advice to say we need to do a sort of like a due diligence and gather some market intelligence in drafting the specification to make sure that we don't advertise for a building in Durban that does not exist or that might not even be there. And I think that's what we've been trying to do, and we failed. All and right. We have identified that we failed in that regard.
But as the chairperson said, maybe you are making those impossible specifications.
qualifications
yeah.
that you can remain where you are. Okay, continue.
No, exactly. For instance, let's say you are looking for a Vauxhall car in Delmas. You know that there's no Vauxhall in Delmas, but you advertise for a Vauxhall in Delmas. You know the answer before you even advertise. I think we need to do that. That is our job better. Because to be honest, to me, the answers that you have provided, they don't make sense. But I think going forward, Chairperson, please, let's try and that is correct that area. Because corruption, particularly in the SCF, it is on specifications. Somebody would design, if you want that is this, and you know that there is somebody around here, you'll design it in such a way that it goes to Boy. And if you don't want anybody that is to win it, you'll design it out of the market. I think let's try and tighten up that area, please. Thanks.
Thanks, Comrade. Let me come to you later. Let's allow Comrade Chilwane to come in on expansion. Yes, Comrade.
Thank you, Chairperson. I won't be that much long because I think we already don't have enough time. But maybe because we don't have any sitting, we have enough time.
Well, we have defense after lunch.
Yeah. You know, when I was looking at this annexure, it's really a concern that CETA in the Fed is the third highest entity when it comes to expansion. For the third and the fourth quarter of 2017-18 financial year, the total amount of about 150.8 million was located in expansion, and you've had about 18 of them for that period. If maybe you can just explain to the committee, how come have you gone so high?
Third quarter, I don't want to be justifying anything because the deviations have happened, and the main reason for third and fourth quarter, it's either the contracts were coming to an end 31st of March of that year. Obviously, you will have to. There are lots of processes that you need to make sure before the contract ends there is a new contract so that you avoid irregular expenditure. But for the fourth, for 2016, are you talking to 2017-18 to National Treasury, right? The main ones were because the contracts were coming to an end 31st March 2018, and therefore we needed to make sure that we've got contracts in place. But I can go into the specifics in terms of the different deviations that we did during that period. So one of the ones that National Treasury did not approve, which was for the access links, the contract actually, the previous extension that we requested was for 12 months. Treasury granted us 6 months. We went out to the market in order for us to get a new service provider. But while we were in the market, there were some legal issues that we experienced in terms of the one of the bidders saying, but you didn't come to me, you left me out, you didn't invite me through to the bid, which caused problems. So there are issues within the, once you've gone out to the, once you've identified that this contract is coming to an end, and the chairperson has alluded to the fact that there is lack of contract management within CETA in terms of monitoring when the contracts are coming to an end and starting the process early. You'll find that once Treasury has given us that extension for the access links, the process for the new service provider to be appointed was delayed by the line of business, for instance. And when you ask reasons why they delayed that, it's because they needed to get the information of each and every link, and we are looking at 200 links in terms of where they are, who is responsible for that link, which building is it at, and hence the whole process was not awarded by the time or within the period that Treasury gave us. So there are different reasons why, but right. Mainly from line of business poor planning.
Maybe that's the point you should actually have started with. Very last word you uttered.
So tell me, do you have project managers in CETA?
Yes.
Why are we paying them? Why is government paying them? Or why is the entity paying them if we've got this so many expansions? Like you say, you've got a problem in the line manage. Why are we paying them? Because seemingly they are not doing the proper job. And I always say, Chairperson, that these expansions and deviations, they are caused by a problem, only one problem, poor planning. Because you cannot plan for a contract that when it comes to an end, at the end of the financial year, then you start to begin to want to ask for deviation or expansion. That is poor planning in its totality. Who are these program managers and what has happened to them? Maybe we should start there, Chairperson. Let's start there.
I think within CETA, there have been lack of consequence management for a long time. And this goes back to how the employee relations section within the human capital management has handled this issue, but also from a management point of view, where the consequence management was not taken seriously. I think we have started to do that in terms of making sure that when there is a lack of planning, we don't just sign to say go ahead and extend the contract or go ahead and deviate. We always want to see the consequence management. And in most cases, what you get is the person that was supposed to do this either have left or the person is still, there was no negligence, for instance. It's because the contract was not flagged with them to say it's coming to an end. So there are different excuses that get given. So we need we need to be more strict and more, I don't know how to put it, more, we need to make sure that we punish the people for the things that they have done which are wrong, especially relating to
No, that's fine. I think the historical problems we understand, but I think the question, because the issues we're dealing with are fairly recent. Is there anyone who is being taken to task for poor planning that has led to the need for extensions of contracts.
Yeah. So if we look at, I'll give an example with the access links. When it comes to the access links, there are people that have already been charged in terms of this, and they are going through disciplinary, where the contracts
is
were
that,
not...
Is that an exception?
No, I'm just giving an example in terms of few of them. So if I look at the extension of leases...
Well, I think what she wants to get is that, is it still the same old way, or is there a difference? And if there is a difference, then let's demonstrate it. But if you say, for example, if we take this one, it's almost as if this is an exception, but the others, well, they might have fallen through the crack. Or I would have preferred you to say, you see, out of this 15, I know that we investigated and found that three of them, it was unavoidable, but as for the other 12 who are taking people through TC, then we'll know that there is change, it is consistent, and it is demonstrable.
Yeah, Chairperson, I think you've nipped it in the bud, because while she's speaking, I was going to ask, how many project managers do you have in CETA in totality? And then how many have gone through the disciplinary or who are going to through the disciplinary? Maybe the chair of the board, Honorable Ross, can I get a view? Can I get a view? Maybe the chair is the best person to answer this question, that why are we paying project managers if we have this kind of situation? And who are those? Did you bring one of them or you don't bring them? Are they not in terms of the management? Because I know it's a highly skilled area of project managers. Those people go to school, they attend courses now and then, but really to bring this entity into a mess, because it's a total mess. 18 expansions in just in two quarters, it's really abnormal. So we would want to know, the consequence management is not something that we have to sing like it's a chorus. It can be a chorus every day. We should see it that this is the problem, we have attended to it, so and so has been put into disciplinary measures, so and so, what has happened? What has happened, Honorable Board Member?
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. I can come back with the list of transgressors and the actions that we have taken against them. Having coming from a project management background, this is the same question we ask ourselves. Since, you know, we are a consulting business, basically, more than anything, it's in a people's business, people-driven, and we are supposed to be the ones who are consulting on behalf of the ICT consultants of government. But obviously, as I say, there needs to be a new CETA, perhaps. But we will come back with a list of the transgressors and the actions that have been taken. I cannot rattle off in terms of project managers that we currently have that are on the matrix.
Well, I think just before you come in, maybe as we move forward, that is actually maybe the most important area of reporting than any other thing. Because if that area is grey, whatever else we're talking about becomes minimal. Continue, Comrade.
Very true, Chairperson. For instance, now we can just go to, you know, as we're just looking at these figures, when we go to Annexure H2, the last page of the expansions and extensions. you know, maybe I will speak on the broadening in SACCO later. At Chatterton, when you look at the percentages in terms of the communications within the National Treasury, these expansions are more than 100%. No, more than 100%. For instance, you look at the intranet solutions. Internet solutions. You know, original contract value was 1.7. Value contract, 1.8. And an increase of about 107%. What happened here? And it was not supported by the National Treasury. Because all of them that I'm going to list, they were not supported by the National Treasury. What happened?
So all this from number 4, 5, 6 up to 11, they are all for the same thing. What happened was that we went out to the market when these links were initially installed, and then the contracts were never renewed for these contracts. We continued with the contract. Then we made a decision to say these people are the owners of those links. Let's set up a master service agreement with them. We then, in order to do that, we went to National Treasury. We asked for a period of 12 months while we are going out to the market to find people to replace those links. So the first original contract there is for the first 6 months. And then while in that 6 months, we couldn't appoint the service provider for us to continue with the provision of this access link. So the value of the contract is for the 6 months, so hence it's more or less the same, because the other contract actually was for 6 months for the 1.7 million, and the next one is for the next 6 months for the 1.8, and the next 6 months is what Treasury did not support. The bidding process did not, it's actually going to the next, it has been adjudicated, it needs to go to the board procurement committee, the next one, which is sitting on the 21st of June. There were delays during the first and foremost, there was delay from line of business in terms of planning and coming out with the spec and going out to the market within the 6 months that was granted by National Treasury. And that we are going to take the appropriate action for that. Because we only went out to the market on the 13th of April after the contract has even already expired. So it shows here it's really bad planning that happened within this area.
Appropriate action for what? In which terms?
In terms of disciplinary for not going out to the market on time before the contract expired.
Only on this one or all of them? Because it's a number.
Oh, on all of them, not only on this one. I was just entering relating to this one, but on all of them.
But then why do you continue even if National Treasury has not supported you? Why do you continue? Because Treasury write you a letter to say we are not going to support this because of 1, 2, 3 reasons. And you continue despite that. and I guess from the top management, yourself as a CFO, the CEO, Dr. Mahati, and all the eloquence in the higher management. And you're going to take reasonable disciplinary measures. Who's going to take those reasonable disciplinary? Are you going to discipline yourself? Are you going to discipline yourself? Because I could have been more comfortable if you said, well, refer the matter to the board. The board will then take a decision. But you're going to take measures against people who have, but it's yourself to blame.
Well, maybe let's answer the question. Who authorized that the expansion should proceed, even though National Treasury had said no?
So, on the one for Access Link, there is no authorization that has been given. So, the service is continuing based on the criticality of the service. But nobody has, the committee that I chair, which is the Bid Adjudication Committee, said approved, subject to National Treasury approving. And that National Treasury approval, if it didn't come, there's no contract that we have entered into with those service providers. What it means is that we are currently incurring. We are currently incurring.
What was the National Treasury's response?
On this one specifically for quarter four that the honourable member is asking about, they said it's not justifiable. The reasons given by us are not justifiable. We should award the bid that we have gone out to the market for. That's what they said.
And then what did you do?
That, so we are in the process of awarding that bid. It's not yet awarded.
Okay.
And then can you talk about the Telkom one? Because they said, you know, maybe you should put us at the same picture. You said it's for the same thing, but different companies or different service providers. And all of them, you know, it becomes so suspicious if there are more than five or more than six or even more than two, you do the same thing. It's very suspicious. There's no way that we can't ask about these questions. Because if you let all of them expire, they expire, you know that this one is expiring on the 31st, then you think that all of them, because they are critical, they are urgent, you're just going to extend it anyway because all of them. It's a very suspicious act. There's no way that we just sit here and not ask about this one. And this money, when you look at them, it's a lot of money, which is not an explainable chapter. Talk to Telkom.
Ma'am, just to explain the nature of the services, it's providing network connectivity to different government sites across the country. So a bid would go out explaining all the sites that where we need network connectivity to, and then the bidders would respond depending on where they've got access or where they can put access in for us, and then the bid will be evaluated depending on price and the type of connectivity that the different bidders will get. Hence, the same type of service to different providers, but each one would have different links awarded to them. So that is just to explain the nature of the services. It also then talks to the criticality thereof, because should we stop the services, then the government department, in whichever instance they are connected,
no,
would then not be connected.
No, that's fine, because, well, it's called blackmail. You know, it's like when you don't account for your antiretroviral budget, you know, government can't say, because you don't account, we're not going to give you money. So we need to go back to project management. So who are the people who are supposed to? And those should be punished worse, because they put us in a situation where we can't do anything. We're stuck. I think that's the point that throughout she's trying to emphasize.
That process is underway. We've identified that the Converged Communication Department relies a lot in this area, and that process is underway. But as the chairman has alluded to yourself, Chair, we will give a complete response so that it explains.
We don't want a slap in the wrist kind of a curriculum.
Chairperson, I'm sure you've just said what I wanted to say, because as much as we know, CETA is very much important for government to run, but then we should not be held like we don't know, because the response is like we are holding you accountable unnecessary, but you've got to do that. What I'm going to suggest, Chairperson, is that we get the list of those project managers responsible for this expansion, and then we get a detailed report in terms of what has happened to them. Because I think at some other stage, Comrade Vincent usually these days says the AG, the bill that was just passed, people are going to be arrested. We're going to recoup all this money. And I think I agree with him. Until that bill, the president signed that bill, becomes into an act, I think it's one thing that's going to minimize all these headaches that we're having. Because this is a terrible mistake, and it's costly. It's costly. And like I'm saying, it raises suspicion. But then let's talk to the issue of Intrasol. The support and maintenance of switches and supply of diesel. It was not supported. And you continued. Let's talk about that one.
Is it still the case of it was critical? To be stopped. I'm trying to check if you find that it is the same thing. You have witnessed project management, but the service aside that you can't interrupt them, and people know that well. Even if we don't, then it goes back to that question. Mm-hmm. Then what?
They will tell us. We're waiting for them.
It is the same issue, same department actually, the Converged Communications. And as you are saying, a gun put on your head, it's almost that, because there will be a SAP switching center that is down, which is affecting so many offices, and then it comes and then somebody says it's going to, if we don't do that, obviously we will, I don't know if I want to call it reported to the portfolio committee of police or home affairs or all those, but that's not an excuse. The reality is that somebody did not do their work in terms of setting up a contract for this issue. So we have come up with an interim measure for us getting diesel, where National Treasury has got an RT70. We want to then tap into that and get diesel through that. Because what has been happening, we've been getting diesel from Infrasol, and Infrasol, I'm sure, get diesel from somebody else. There were the people that got the bid, I think, I don't remember when.
which included the maintenance of the switching centers and supplying the diesel. We've realized that you have to separate the two, because we did go out to the market. That's where I spoke about the fact that the whole process was compromised, and we couldn't award.
Who compromised the process? Because that is the fundamental question. It's not just to say the process was compromised. Somebody compromised it. Who is that person?
It was both people from line of business and supply chain.
Who are they within those?
I will need to get the names and provide that to the committee.
No, don't provide them to us. Yes. Get the names and take action against
them.
That's what we want.
Yes, we are doing exactly that in terms of making sure that there's consequence management for this issue.
But the people who are heading those departments, do they really deserve to be there?
And she's just reminding me, it's the head of department that we are taking action against.
But, you know, Chairperson, my problem is that they are explaining to us, but they could not give clarity to National Treasury. We wanted clarity. National Treasury says in the letter the reason provided is not justifiable. National Treasury requested additional information from a CETA, and to date no clarity was provided. So we'll have to come every time and play the referee between entities or department until it's only when we call them into the meeting that they provide clarity. If they are failing to provide clarity on their intergovernmental relations, and then how sure are we sure that that information they are giving to us is a true one? If you could not provide clarity to the National Treasury, and you come and tell us here that it's the line manager, is the same thing, it was critical. Who is this head of department? His name or her name is very much expensive to cost us this lot of money and all these gravely mistakes. You still keep that person. And I'm sure there are other expansions that they've made applications to last week. I'm sure there's something that the same person is still involved, and you still keep that person there. So we're just rounding around the circle, Chairperson. We'll ask the same question and we'll get the same response.
Because I would imagine, Stangan, I don't know, maybe in the thing that you are developing there, in this instance, I would expect that the CEO or the chairperson of the board should be the one writing to Treasury and say, look, we have been put in a mess by Mr. So-and-so in this department. We are taking action against him to show that you are taking responsibility. But to make the application as if it is justifiable, when clearly it is because somebody has not managed the processes well, and you don't seem to be acting from an acknowledgement on your side as leadership that somebody has messed up, and you're actually taking action, so that Treasury can understand that as leadership you have been put in a particular position and you are taking action to rectify that situation. I think if you were to approach it that way, then it gives Treasury a sense that you as the leadership would have wanted things differently than if you are somewhat complicit in the whole thing. You also try to explain it away when it actually cannot be justified. I think that's the level we should be at as the leadership of the entity.
Whether we are moving or what in terms of this question, because it's the same answer. Okay, let's talk about this. I know it has been on discussion on the forensic investigation, the Bowman's Gifland Incorporated original contract value $495.4, and then extension value is $9.6. Way above 100%. And what is agent about it? It's the same thing. It's an agent one, you can't. Can we hear an explanation about this one?
For Bowman specifically, the reason why we felt it was agent is because there were threats to different staff members. That's when we then initiated through the Audit and Risk Committee, we then initiated the SCM investigation. So with that, we felt that we needed to appoint a service provider that already had the knowledge of the area, because they were appointed to do the forensic investigation in terms of the human capital management. And the threat happened when they were still busy with the human capital management investigation. But I'm sure the chairperson of the board can add in terms of that issue, because it was more of an Audit and Risk Committee decision to appoint a service provider to do that forensic investigation.
Follow up before the chairperson of the board comes in. So in that one, they are also providing you security or what? Because the scope is very wide. You can imagine from 495 to 9.6 million. It's a very huge gap. Maybe if it's inclusive of your security and all those other stuff, I don't know, Chairperson, if maybe I'm just trying to think aloud. Because the gap is very wide. It's very wide.
No, very true. Because the standard other things that maybe you should. Because I would imagine that if you have an original scope and you want an expansion, it should be something minor. It can't be that the extension is bigger than the original scope. It cannot be.
I understand the comment about the scope expansion, because truth be told, the original 400, almost 500,000 was based on, as we have indicated in the comments, a hotline tip-off. So it was a very limited investigation that was going to be done in the HCM space. That opened such a can of worms, and it just was no longer the hotline tip-off. It was now a full department being investigated with a lot of consequence management and huge repercussions in HCM, where we had, and it was a real painful result, but it was necessary, and we lost a number of people from human capital management. So, correct, it's not an expansion of the existing scope. It was really a new investigation. But with the threat, it was prior to my time, but my understanding when I joined was that people were running scared with the personal threats that they had received. And so Bowman's at the time had knowledge of the people that left, everything that related to those individuals, and hence that decision was made.
You know, what I don't understand is that when a company has that kind of advantage, it means that actually, even if you send it out on tender, they will be the ones who are going to emerge as the favorable one. So this short-circuiting, not only in this particular, I think if we look at all the expansions in a number of them, or even deviations, you'll find they understand the situation well. Not only here, but in other entities that we've dealt with. And I'm saying, for me, the simple logic is, then if you think these ones are better, then test them. And then they will shine through, because they clearly and already know and understand the environment. So you then find yourself in this space, which you could have
she could have avoided. I think could maybe have gone to Treasury and say, can we advertise for a shorter period of time, or something like that. So that where we started, that expansions and deviations must not just be used willy-nilly. Let's really apply our minds to these things, so that when you make a request, people must get a sense that you really applied your mind, and or you are really in a tight situation. Not where somebody did not check their calendar. And then you just wake up and say, hey, look, this thing is, it can be. I think that's the point that is coming through.
And then this, I just want to get, is the same report that you expecting by the 30th of this month, or is another one on this investigation by Bowman? Is it the same one or is something different?
This is the scope of human capital management, which I had mentioned to Honourable Kakana that we will also bring those results just as a reminder to the committee with the June report.
You will bring it as a reminder. I don't get.
We in a previous scope of submission.
Let me assist in clarifying the question. This expansion that you requested, what happened to it after it was declined by National Treasury?
So they were appointed and then they did the work. And then the extension, the request for extension actually even went to National Treasury late. And then by then they've already started the work.
You went to Treasury when they were already working?
Yes.
And so when National Treasury said no, you said, well, the horse has bolted out of the stable already, and they proceeded nonetheless.
Mm.
Who said they should proceed? Or in fact, how did you ask them to do additional work before you even applied to National Treasury? And after applying to National Treasury, who then said, continue anyway? Or you all just looked the other way? Because that's leadership, that's taking responsibility.
Looking at this matter specifically, there are two people that have been, I don't know if I should use the word charged, that are going to be held accountable for this issue. Because
who are those
people? The person who was the acting executive for internal audit, and also the executive for supply chain management. Because if the chairperson of the audit committee gives an instruction to say go ahead and appoint someone, you follow due process. And the due process was you send a letter to National Treasury. One person needed to do that, which was the executive for supply chain. And then the acting executive for internal audit was supposed to then send the relevant information on time to the executive for SCM so that the whole process can be done. That did not happen. It happened late.
When is that?
And the executive for SCM is currently on suspension.
Until when?
I don't have the details in terms of when. Because I think the
we don't want that person suspended until Christmas.
Yes. Yeah. So the charges have been prepared. I don't have details whether they've been served yet.
All right.
And does Fonduzi Forensic Investigation does? What does it do?
Fonduzi, they were appointed through a procurement process, and they were responsible for the regions in terms of the forensic investigation for the regions. In the SCM space.
Okay. How many investigation service providers do you have currently?
So currently it's only Funduzi and Bowman.
Funduzi, it was specifically for supply chain management. And then Bowman is for the whole entity.
There were also Bowman was also appointed, previously they were appointed for the human capital management. They finished that work. And then they are doing the work of the, they also did the work for SCM. But that work, the approach was that you investigate the people, not the contract. And then obviously while you're investigating the people, you will then deal with the contracts that they dealt with. Currently, they are finalizing the investigation of the FDA-related contract, which is the work that it came about because majority of the people that left from SCM were touching the FDA contract, and we needed to do a deep investigation in terms of those contracts.
So there's no way that these two companies are doing the same work?
They're not doing the same work because when it comes to Bowman, they were only dealing with the SCM people that were at head office. And then Funduzi was then dealing with the people at who does SCM in our 9 regional offices.
So Funduzi, have they completed their investigation?
They are also going to complete the investigation end of June. They've done all the field work. What is left now is those people where there are charges against them, they are staying so that they can do the prosecution of those charges, for those charges.
Okay. Chairperson, I was eager to ask National Treasury to comment on this Bowman in terms of the gap that we are stressing, that the gap is too much in terms of the expansion. I was on that view that maybe if National Treasury could just talk a little bit about them so that they can tell us the situation exactly to the satisfaction of our committee chairperson.
You want to put a rider on that question,
yeah,
from Rakita?
No, I don't understand. You investigate an individual for transgressing the law that is on a contract. Now, you come to us, you are saying, no, they were investigated as individuals. You appointed another company to investigate the contracts. Now, I don't understand. Can you explain that to me?
So, the first investigation in SCM, we had confiscated 80 laptops, computers, the whole of the SCM department in head office. The computers were confiscated and we were looking for corruption and conflict of interest because we realized that it wasn't an isolated case to a specific contract. So that head office people, that was awarded to Sian Ray and Bowman. The individuals in SCM who are in the regions, all of their laptops were also confiscated and imaged and then returned to them whilst the investigation continues, that was awarded to Fundutsi. So the nature of the charges sometimes comes back to a specific contract in SEM where they didn't follow due process, or in other instances we found conflict of interest where people were so busy trading with their own personal stuff that they weren't paying attention to the SEM processes. So the cleanup in supply chain management was then across all wrongdoing in that specific department. The part that maybe you find then confusing is the FDA and related contracts came in so many of the SCM people investigations. We found different people being part of that contract. So we didn't want to stop at a SCM process not being followed when it looked as if there could be real corruption in a particular contract and where the value for money was so questionable, and hence the specific investigation on FDA-related contracts and a separate engagement around that.
All right. We leave it here because I don't understand. I'm still in despair. You are investigating me for that. Now, tomorrow you are investigating that is the stealing of the pet, separate from me. That's what I don't understand. Because the basis of the investigation is the action that I've done. Now you are saying tomorrow you are instituting another one now. The same person is being investigated. Now, yes, the same person is being investigated twice. The first one was you are investigating me as an individual for stealing the pet. Tomorrow you are saying no. Now we will need to investigate him separate from that case, the same person, for the same transgression. It does not make sense, that is to me.
All right. I want us to do this, comrade. I'm looking at our time. I just want to see how we manage it so that we can have some space to calm down after this hectic schedule and be ready for defense at 2 o'clock. I'll be guided by you, Comrade Chilwane. I know you have a question for that National Treasury should respond to. They will give them to respond, but I want to check if you had other questions that they could talk to, and then Treasury would come in last.
There are so many, Chairperson, but it's fine. There are so many. There are many issues that I wanted to raise with future in terms of the expansion.
But
I think we didn't manage time in the first deviations. But there are many. Can you talk about the, I think it's BBI, upgrading the existing CETA next generation network? It was not supported. Maybe I should have started by checking, but I think all of them, even though that the National Treasury has said they don't support them, but I think CETA has continued in any way. You know? So maybe it doesn't, it's neither there or there. Chairperson, but I wanted to check the upgrade existing CETA next generation network. It was not supported. What was it for?
Okay. So, actually, we went to Treasury with this one. The work was already done, but the way the payment was going to take place was it was going to be paid over 10 years. So what normally happens in this type of transactions, you pay over a period. But the fact of the matter, we've already identified this as irregular expenditure and include it in our irregular expenditure register. But what we wanted to do was to make sure that the entire amount is not irregular expenditure, because we haven't paid for it. We are only going to pay for it over a period. So approaching National Treasury was more to say, we have entered into the contract, we have given them all that information, and we have found out that it is indeed irregular because a process was not followed to do the upgrade. There is a contract in place that is 10 years. If you want to add a new link, you will have to go to follow a process to add that link maybe to the existing contract or go out to the market. That did not happen. The second issue was the upgrade of the existing broadband. That did not follow a due process, and the people said they didn't know that they have to follow a due process to do the upgrade. However, we have identified it as irregular expenditure, but because it was going to be paid over 10 years, we felt that not the entire 10 years is irregular expenditure if it can be ratified.
Ratified or rectified?
Ratified.
Yeah, if it's not ratified, then it will be rectified.
Okay, yes.
All right.
Professor, you know, because for progress, I'll ask that I stop here, but next time when we meet Sita, I'll ask to be the first one, because there are still many issues that I still want to deal with them on the variation, especially the percentage. Percent, they are way above 100%. So I think we still need to get an explanation, detailed explanation. Probably maybe when they come, they'll be able to tell us who are these project managers who have
changed. Why don't we do this conversation? Since we are still scheduled to meet over the forensic reports, we could still deal with these matters. Except to say, Chair, you are now in charge. Things that happen under your watch, you are responsible and accountable. We can't evoke the ghost of the past as a justification for continuing with this. So the issues that she's raising, they are not issues of 2013, 2014. It's 2017, 2018, where this leadership is supposed to take responsibility. So I'm just saying, just keep it at the back of your mind. Just go and do some bit of digging so that when we meet next time on this matter, that's a very clear and focused responses in terms of what it is that we've done. Because even what we've done is a reaction. But proactively, how do we put systems in place that that kick back against this kind of malpractice? I think that's what is fundamental, especially if meaning that actually the system is still infected. If you have expansions that are more than 100% the original scope, that will be a red flag that there's a problem. So it needs to be investigated thoroughly. It cannot be more than 100% of the original scope. I think let's use that as our standard.
But maybe just before we finish, Treasury, can they speak on this domain?
And National Treasury, your understanding, your assessment, and what needs to happen?
Thanks, Chair. With forensic audit investigation in general, you'll have the scope because you cannot go and advertise a competitive bid. You'll have either a panel of forensic auditors, maybe 10 or 15 in that panel. Then you'll request them to submit proposals. And then you do an assessment and then you appoint one on the initial scope. when the report comes and it says these officials must be disciplined or there are criminal cases, whatever further work they will do, it will be a continuation of the original one. If they came to us and says, we appointed this supplier, they've investigated, now the matters are undergoing disciplinary processes, we want their officials to be witnesses and this, we will not say no, we'll say yes. Or they want to give evidence in court, we'll say yes. But in this case, even in their letter, if you look at their letter, they say we appointed them for less than 500,000, but the scope was narrow. It's their letter that is coming to us. It was narrow, 500,000 2 months, but now we are increasing the scope. It will take 12 months. It's new work. And because of that, the process is that because now there's a new scope, because you may appoint to do preliminary work. Preliminary work says do extensive audit. You still go back to a database or to your panel and says, including the current service provider, and says, okay, now we have broadened the scope. We want to do 1, 2, 3. Give us, propose us now. You're not going to go and advertise, but you will request them, and you do an assessment, and you get better price because they know they are going to compete, and they will estimate even the hours. But in this case, the scope was narrow, below 500,000. It was supposed to be 2 months. A report should have been issued. Then the preliminary work identified further work. Instead of subjecting it to a fair and transparent process, they gave to one supplier. When they came to us, they wanted us to rubber stamp. It's the same as the BBI. Most of the institutions, like we said previously, when they come, they've already done the thing. They only want you to rubber stamp their decision. And that's what happened here.
The institution is wrong, very wrong. Very, very, very wrong. But anyway, we'll still deal with these matters when we talk to the outcome of those forensic processes. You'll have the time to talk about this matter. Well, Chair and your team, we want to thank you, and I hope you'll appreciate that it is concerns that we have. But I'm sure when you live here, you also have been assisted to have a sense of where the focus should be, the emphasis should be, and the amount of energy that you need to put in particular areas. Because you are now in charge. Things that happened last year or early this year in January, you are responsible. It's no longer about accusing someone who did something in your absence. It talks to your quality of leadership and your ability to, you know what I call, just trudging along. Are we able to lead institutions? Lead them to achieve their strategic objectives, or we're just holding the fort, just muddling along.
The forensic investigations that we are going to call Peter back into the meeting and ask them about those forensic investigations are the forensic investigations that were not dealt with correctly in terms of budgeting for them and financing. So how are we sure that whatever that they're going to be giving us is justified when they themselves were conflicted because they were not appointed correctly? It was extended and extended. So what I'm trying to ask, Chairperson, maybe in your concluding remarks, just deal with that, because when we go home today, I'm just asking myself, how do we take this investigation from Bowman being an investigation that we are all looking forward to?
I can't even remember what I was saying now. You see, you are as guilty as they are.
But anyway, no, I hear you. I you are talking to process, and what we're going to get will be substance. So I separate process from substance, and I'm with you that there are issues with process, as National Treasury explained. But if that process produces evidence that Chiloane was conflicted, derived benefits from ABC, I don't think that would necessarily turn our eyes from those facts. But maybe that's something that we can talk to later. But we had agreed in our last hearing with CETA and the police that when those reports come out, we need to engage to satisfy ourselves that this talk about investigation is not just talk, but it's action. So if in the process of doing the right thing, they've done wrong things, that also need to be corrected. But it must not stop us from making sure that there is momentum in the right direction. So, Dizon, Noyendo. All right, there's supposed to be lunch. Even Sita is invited to lunch. Let's go and have lunch and make peace.